Jesus, I mean, you guys do nothing but complain about how you can't stand it in this place here, and then you haven't got the guts just to walk out. I mean, what do you think you are, for Christ's sake, crazy or something?
Skip to the end.
Welcome to episode 63 of the Skip to the End podcast. As ever, I'm Ben.
I'm Gemma.
And I'm Mark.
And we're getting more and more listeners each episode. Our last episode had something like 50,000 downloads in the first week, which is insane. So we want to say a big welcome, hello, to all of our new listeners. If you're not already following us on social media, please do. Twitter at STTE podcast or facebook.com/skip to the end podcast.
Loads of new people. And do you know what I like about them all? They're all taking the time to leave reviews. They're commenting on the topics. They're commenting on masturbate. And they're not being offended.
And as well, I mean, who'd have thought, like, after last week's episode, everybody now realises how absolutely poor I am as well. So
exactly.
Saving up your 30p a day for your cinema trip.
Someone's piggy bank and put Gemma's cinema fund.
Yeah, I love it. It's
and
right.
I've noticed a lot of men have started following me thinking I'm gay because I declared my love for Ryan Gosling.
Yeah. You were very brazen about it.
I was. I'm still gay for Gosling.
Yeah.
But let's move on because I've had GAY, GAY ringing me. The Weather Girls wanted me to go and dance on stage. I don't know what's going on.
The Weather Girls, if they haven't been relevant for about 35 years.
No, they're coming back. They're coming back.
I'm bringing it back. Let's think about this episode.
We've got so much good stuff. Our main review is Split, the new film from M. Night Shyamalan starring James McAvoy. People are saying it's his return to form. Stay tuned and find out whether it is or not.
Big words then, Ben.
Indeed. Gemma, who are we masturbating over this time round?
We're going to be masturbating over Nicolas Cage.
I know.
Cage His myself. Hair, look at him. Oh. He's just the one.
His receding hairline.
I love him.
And Mark, what are we doing quiz-wise? It's a big one for you.
It's the final round of the one, the only, the, I can't remember, it is called Cast and Furious. And at this moment in time, it's all square.
Yeah.
So I could still win this. It's
me versus you. It's me versus you. If I win, then it's all tied up. If you win, you are the champion. Imagine that. Gemma, what are we rewatching?
We're going to be rewatching One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, a favourite of the top 250 IMDb movies. I believe it's number 16.
Number is in your top five of all time.
And it was in my top five of all time, which is the one that really matters. IMDb.
Me and Ben are going without no lube. We're going in dry. This is our first time. So that's going to be interesting.
Yes, and we've got loads more besides listener questions, all the usual malarkey.
Ben, you know we just talked about me being a bit gay for Gosling.
Yes.
On the subject of La La Land, which has been one of our most downloaded episodes, this week we've had loads of tweets coming in for Ben, and it's like, not offensive, but they've been a bit like, Ben, you can't be scoring films lower than Pixels, because you actually gave Pixels, the masterpiece by the man himself, Adam Sandler, 6 out of 10.
Mm.
So technically, people are starting to think you rate La La Land lower than that.
Yeah, so the tweet that you're referring to came in from Lyndon Wells, who is dead to me now. Sorry, Lyndon. He was having a joke, he was having a laugh, but it brings up a good point. I did, in fact, score Pixels 6 out of 10. I did, in fact, score La La Land 5 out of 10. Does that mean that on our 10-point scale, I think that Pixels is 10% better than La La Land? No, obviously not. Objectively, not. La La Land is a significantly better film than Pixels. However, not all films are created equal. When we rate our films, when we give our reviews, we are not rating one film against another. We're rating it on its own individual merits. And each film has its own level of prestige behind it. It has its own level of difficulty to achieve. And more importantly, it has its own ambitions. La La Land is a significantly more ambitious film than Pixels. All Pixels wanted to be was another Adam Sandler knock-around comedy. And with those modest ambitions, it succeeded. It was mildly amusing, mildly diverting. So I'm happy enough that I gave it 6 because it succeeded in its own aims. La La Land, I couldn't give it more than a 5 because I hate musicals. And if I would have given it a higher number, I'd be lying to you. I'll tell you what, listeners, we don't lie to you on Skip to the End.
I do loads, but...
That's biological and you can't help yourself.
I have to.
Yeah. But I think that is perfect. Fair, and exactly that's why people keep listening to us. We are giving our own opinions. Mm-hmm. It might not agree with yours, but hey, it doesn't matter.
Everyone's right in their own special way.
Yeah. But mostly me. Let's get started.
Well,
topic of conversation this time round is top three westerns. Before we get into that, though, I'm a bit parched here.
My throat is drier than a...
Very dry thing.
Very dry thing, yeah.
Sound about a nun.
I could do with a drink.
So, shall we have this then? What's this here? Magna's Irish Cider.
Oh, original apple.
Mm-hmm. From 1935, so it must be good. Let's get on this.
It's past its sell-by date by now then, sure. Oh,
lovely. That's beautiful. That's really good. The perfect choice for a topic discussion.
I genuinely didn't think I was going to get that open then. I had to watch my elbow because I thought I was going to hit one of your frames.
Oh, got it all down my arm.
But it's lovely to have down your arm. It's the choice to have dripping down your arm.
That's Magnus.
Yeah, I think we're getting a bit bad with the shameful plug-in, but, you know, this is definitely curing the sore throat, and it if I was going to have any cider on a Sunday, it would be Magnus. Mm. So let's get on with the topic.
Indeed. So we're going to talk about our top three westerns. Before we do, I just wanted to put something out there to you. Obviously, it's going to be interesting to see what three films you've picked, but also to me, it's going to be interesting what era of films you've picked, because there have been very distinct eras within westerns. You had the classical westerns of the 40s and 50s that starred John Wayne. It was very much good versus evil, white hat versus black hat. Then in the 60s and 70s, we started to get more revisionist westerns where there was more moral grey areas, and that's when Clint Eastwood was starting to come up in those kind of roles. In the 80s and 90s, westerns kind of fell out of favour, with a couple of notable exceptions, of course, but for the most part, you couldn't get a western made because they just weren't making money. But then there's been a massive resurgence in westerns again in the 2000s. Up to this very day, we're seeing cracking, absurd, bizarre, weird and fantastic westerns coming out seemingly every few months. So I'm really intrigued to see what kind of era of westerns you guys have picked. And I'm going to start with Poochie first. What
Hello.
Have you gone for?
Okay, so as you probably know on previous episodes, I am beginning to like westerns, but it's not my number one genre. Mm-hmm. So I'm so glad you get to that disclaimer, because that's how I've kind of been looking at it. So I'm more of a new generation kind of western person. Yeah. So my first pick is Bone Tomahawk.
Oh, shit, yeah.
Tremendous.
Absolutely incredible. And I think it's one of those films, especially a new generation western, I think this is a perfect starter. Mm-hmm. Because not only is it a western, I think it's a horror as well.
Yeah.
It's the directorial debut of S. Craig Zahler as well. And obviously we know it stars Kurt Russell, or Skip to the End's dad.
Yes.
The official title of Kurt Russell. But I'm not going to go into it too much, because Ben and Mark, you guys had it in your top fives of 2016 films as well. So we know what the film is about. I didn't really have a chat on it. And what I absolutely love about this, the cannibals. Who'd have thought? It's usually the bad sheriff or the Indians or the bad cowboys and stuff. But the villains of this are absolutely batshit crazy cannibals with these crazy ass throat instruments is that noise they emit is terrifying. But what I love about this as well is just, you know, the performances. You've got the absolute gore, which I think is especially a necessity now to westerns, especially coming from the 1960s era. But it's the type of a Western horror that has a valid future for cinema goers. And I think it would be great to see these kind of films really move the genre forward as well.
I've not got this in my list, as much as I love that film. I think the reason why it didn't quite make the cut is because it's too soon, it's too recent.
That's fair enough.
I think it needs a bit of time to marinate for me before I can put it into an all-time list.
But I think for me, being a newbie to the Western genre, that's really trying to appreciate it a lot more now, I think it's a great first choice for me personally.
Hey, I watched it at Christmas with my dad. He's a massive Western fan. He brought me up watching Westerns as a kid. He absolutely loved this film. The scalping and the slicing of the half of the body. He wasn't even fazed by it. You know, I was like, oh my God. My wife was like, oh my God. He's just like, this is brilliant. This is really solid, good filmmaking.
Yeah, I mean, God, who did
that's an 80-year-old man who's loving it still. And that's good, because he's grown up watching all the spaghetti Westerns and all he's a traditional Western lover, and he still had respect for it, so...
Yeah, that scalp scene, though. Wow.
One of my favourite moments from film last year.
Oh, God, it's just, it's vivid, isn't it? It's staying with me now. I'm actually picturing it.
Right. Don't picture it. Have some Magnus. Oh, God. Forget about that horrible, traumatic scene.
Oh, God, this original apple's going to help me a lot.
And I'm going to have to try and follow this up with a choice of my own. So I think there might be a little bit of crossover on this episode. So I'm going to get the big one out the way that I might get a, I've got that too. 1992, Unforgiven.
No.
Okay,
didn't quite make my list.
No, but the floor is yours.
I was 10 when this film came out, and like I said earlier, me and my dad used to watch Westerns all the time. Directed by Clint Eastwood, I don't think he's made a better film to myself. I think he's absolutely outstanding. But the cast itself, you've got obviously Gene Hackman, who gives a performance that should be Oscar worthy. It's absolutely fantastic. Richard Harris, our friend Saul Rubinek,
good old friend,
and obviously Morgan Freeman. Now, the reason I chose this is because it has a place in my heart as a kid growing up. You know, I always remember it, but it's the cinematography, the filmmaking, but I think it has one of the best endings of a film ever. It's not the big payoff, the big victory. Mm-hmm. It's quite bleak and quite daunting. Clint Eastwood, for some reason lately, when he made that film with Bradley Cooper, what was it called?
American Sniper.
It kind of took his foot off the gas, and I think like that can't be the same filmmaker as these masterpieces. And I would class this film as a masterpiece. When Ben started this topic today and said that the 90s had this kind of a bit of a resurgent for the trying to win back the love for Westerns, there isn't a better one that got people talking about Westerns again. And then that was 1992. It always makes me think this is an 80s film or 70s, because it's a Western. The 90s started bringing back some classics. I'm sure you'll hear more soon. This film is up there for me with Taxi Driver, The Good, Bad and the Ugly, all of them. It's perfect.
It is a very good film. It wasn't far off my top three, to be honest. The thing I love about it is it was kind of playing off what we know about Clint Eastwood and subverting what we know about him. Historically, a Clint Eastwood Western, he's the guy with the man with no name. He's cool as hell. He's killing bad guys left, right and centre. He's basically unbeatable. He's just the best there is. So to see him in this film as a guy who is almost too scared to get on a horse, like right near the start of the film where he's trying to jump on the horse and he can't get on it.
Get on it.
Because he's so out of practice. He gave up drinking, he gave up the lawless life to just grow plants and, you know, look after his kids. So to see him as this kind of broken down old man is not what we're used to seeing from a Clint Eastwood cowboy. And it was a really brilliant idea doing that.
Have you seen it?
I have, yes. And a very long time ago, though.
It's not fresh enough.
I think my favourite character in it, though, is it Englishman Bob?
Yes.
Played by Richard Harris?
Yes.
I love him, and he's not in it that much. He's in it towards the start. He's a bit of an arsehole, and then they run him out of town. But he's just such a swaggering dick of a man that I absolutely love him in that film. And the funny thing is, I know that Richard Harris is Jared Harris's dad. I know this to be true. But when I watched this film again recently, I forgot Richard Harris was in it. And when you first are introduced to his character, you just hear his voice. They're on a train and you can hear him speaking over his shoulder. And I thought it was Jared Harris because I'm used to seeing him in things like Mad Men recently. I was like, Jesus Christ, those two are so alike. Their voices are almost identical. And they look hell of a lot alike, of course, as well.
Oh, man, I'm excited. It's his topic. What have you got? Come on.
I'm going to go with one that I think one or both of you might have, and it is the remake of True Grit from 2010.
No, neither of you got it.
Mm-mm. It is an absolutely fantastic film. It is everything you would want from a Western. I've seen both versions of True Grit, and the original John Wayne version is very good also, but this one just takes the cake because it is more faithful to Charles Portis's original novel. Plus, you've got the fact that it's written and directed by the Coens, who are absolute masters. And the MVP of this film for me is the cinematographer, Roger Deakins. Roger Deakins is the best in the game. We all know that. He's been nominated for something like 13 Oscars. Never won, inexplicably, but he's the king. And he is never better than when photographing wide open vistas, which are obviously the bread and butter of Westerns. And he is the king at doing them. Another film that he was the cinematographer for, which you never know, might come in one of your lists, was the assassination of Jesse James by the coward Robert Ford. And he's the cinematographer for that. And that looks beautiful as well. The film is so crisp. And the acting, we've got Jeff Bridges in my favourite kind of Jeff Bridges mould, which is crusty old man. Whenever he plays like a crotchety old fella, I'm sold, I'm in. Matt Damon's doing great work as well, but then the real acting heavyweight of the film for me was Hayley Steinfeld. It was her movie as Matty, even though she was nominated for Best Supporting Actor at the Oscars, which was nonsense to me. She wasn't supporting anybody, they were supporting her. That was her movie. It's a brilliant film, all ends up.
Is that the one that we did when you picked the best performance from a child?
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
This is getting all the topics
absolutely
back here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's good because not many people have respect for remakes. Obviously, The Thing is one that we all absolutely love, but this is one where I have actually gone back and seen the original, and I do actually claim that the remake is better. I think it's because it's just more, it's with when I'm around, you know, I remember going to see it on DVD, having it on DVD and kind of seeing it in the cinema and stuff, but Jeff Bridges, man, he is absolutely the king.
Yeah.
To see him in Hell or High Water recently. He can do anything he wants. And that was I think it's been a few years since sort of Tron and stuff. I remember the performance here stood out more than anything else by an absolute mile.
Definitely some of the best work he's done in years. He was nominated for an Oscar for it, and it was his second nomination in as many years. I think it was the year before he was nominated for Crazy Heart. He just had a really good run going. Go on then, Gemma, give us your second one.
Okay, still with the modern age, I've gone for Slow West.
Oh, really good film.
Never seen it.
Oh, that's a shame.
No.
It's definitely a recommendation I can give to you today. It's a more contemporary take on the Western genre, I think, as well. Mm-hmm. Very, very new. And obviously you've got Cody Smith McPhee and Michael Fassbender, so two very big names at the moment. Stellar performance by Cody Smith McPhee as well. But for me, the star of this isn't necessarily the actors, who are very fine, by the way, as well. For me, it's the music. And you know me and my scores. I'm kind of a fan of that.
You're a score whore.
I'm a score whore. I really am, though. It's funny because I'm laughing because it's true. The person that did the original score for this film was a chap called Jed Kurzel. So Jed Kurzel is going to be a little bit famous in a few months' time, as he's done the original score for the Alien Covenant film.
Ooh.
So something to look out for there. But the reason why I'm so impressed with this score, you associate very country and Western kind of music, like banjos, like the whole whistle in the background. Mm-hmm. But this is much more of a modern take on it. It's very minimalist. It's very stylized as well. And it gives that kind of, I don't know, like kind of the Mercury Music Prize sound, if you will. Like,
pretentious,
you know, yeah, like kind of like James Blake-ish. But also as well, the director of this, who's a chap called John McClane, he used to be part of an indie group in the mid-2000s called the Beta Band.
Wasn't he also in Die Hard?
What?
Moonlighting as a terrorist fighter.
Wow.
But I think there was a lot of influence from the director to Jed Kurzel as well, and it works really, really beautifully. It also has one of the greatest visual metaphors ever in not just Westerns, but films as well. The main story of Jay, who's played by Cody Smith McPhee, is trying to go after this girl that he's absolutely in love with called Rose. He doesn't get the girl. She rejects him. She ain't interested. Mm-hmm. And at the very end, there's a beautiful shootout scene in a lovely wooden shack as well. Guns and shotguns all going off. Jay unfortunately gets shot in the stomach, but as he falls against the wall, a load of salt falls into his stomach. So it's the whole term of salt rubbing in the wounds.
Literally got salt in the wounds.
And it's one of the greatest metaphors ever. And it's just a great, quirky film. Love
it. That moment kind of summed up the script for me. It's a darkly comic script, kind of subversively so. Really good film, Mark. I think, don't quote me, but I think it's on Netflix.
It is on Netflix. Yeah.
If not, I'll go to HMV. That's HMV, the music choice of the generation. No, I will buy it. You know what I've done recently. Yeah. I know I let down Ben on one episode, but I went and made sure that,
You've done it multiple times. I just brought evidence once.
But yes, I will watch it because you sold it to me.
Mm-hmm. Also, as well, it's one of the greatest things about this film is it actually takes you back to the beginning of the film at the end. So it revisits all of the deaths that take place in the film. Mm. And I've never seen that in a film, let alone a Western.
So giving a bit of extra weight by doing that. Yeah. Mm,
just remind you that it's not just a body count. Yeah. There's lives, and this is where their lives ended.
Mm-hmm. It's on the list. I'll report back in 2 weeks. I've set myself up. The listeners can have me if I don't. I'll just read on IMDb this is what happens and come back. No, I will. I'll watch it, I promise. My next film, there's no 80s films on this topic for me, which is a first. So it's 2003, Kevin Costner's third ever directed film, Open Range.
I have never seen this one.
I've never seen it.
Good, because it's a bloody good film and you can both go away and watch it and come back in 2 weeks. Okay. So I broke this down to 4 points that basically made it for me, and that's what put it on here. So the first one is the scenery and the cinematography. It's some of the best stuff you'll ever see. I don't think people give Kevin Costner enough credit for being a director. People forget that. They just associate him as being the actor in Bodyguard and stuff like this. He's a bloody good director, and this is his third attempt. You know, most people on their third attempt are making stuff like Morats. So he's done pretty well.
I love how even you are burning Kevin Smith now. It used to just be me.
I know, he's got a lot to do. But the characters, okay, so you care about the characters. I won't go into the story because it will ruin bits about you, but the most solid performance in this film isn't Costner, even though he's in it. Mm-hmm. It is Robert Duvall. Absolutely mind-blowing and should be winning an Oscar. Honestly, I'm not just saying this for then you to go, oh, Mark, you built that up too much. It's incredible. The third one is it's the right amount of action. Sometimes in a Western, they have too much action or not enough. Mm-hmm. This is the right amount. It doesn't get to the point where you're sick of it. And when it does come, it hits you bloody hard and it's done bloody well. And the best point about this film, the romance. I think you can overdo it with romance in a film like this. I honestly do. I think you can get it wrong. They get it right again. But what happens in this film where he nails being a director is that the character played by Kevin Costner is called Charlie Waite. He is having a dream sequence where he doesn't know if it's reality or not. And he wakes up in this crazy world. And you know, in sort of Apocalypse Now, when it's a bit sort of drug orientated and it's a bit phasing, mm-hmm. a bit odd, I think that's quite an art to kind of master and not take you away from the film of feel of a Western. In this film, he nails it. And I might be like, Mark, what the hell are you talking about? He doesn't take you away from the fact it is a really good Western set in the 90s, but he puts a dream sequence in there which could so ruin everything. And I think that's a bloody skill. Mm. And when you see this scene, you'll see it. It's a bit like, you know, like on Big Lebowski when it takes you away and it's comical.
Yeah. Yeah.
It could be, you could get it wrong. Mm-hmm. And imagine trying to do that in a Western. It works. And I need you to see this because I want to talk about Duvall's performance. It is unbelievable.
The only thing that that's making me think of, have you seen Sopranos?
Yes.
Because in Sopranos, there'd be quite a lot of dream sequences where Tony wouldn't be this mobster from New Jersey. He'd be a slightly more erudite man. And it never detracted from the real gangster epic we were watching. So that's what I'm thinking of,
yeah,
when you're saying that.
And it's
that.
Tough, isn't it, to get right?
Very tough.
So it's annoying because I want you to both go, oh, yeah, I remember this film, Duvall. It's amazing. Costner is the man. Watch it at some point. It's bloody good.
Mm-hmm.
Shall do.
Good, good. My next pick is 1993 film starring our daddy, Kurt Russell. It's Tombstone.
I've got it too.
Have you?
Yay!
See, I would argue that Tombstone isn't necessarily a great film. It's a very good film. It's not a great film. There are better Westerns, but it's one of my favourites, mainly because of Val Kilmer. So Val Kilmer plays Doc Holliday, and he plays him as this very camp, effete Southern gentleman who also has tuberculosis, so he's always just sort of coughing into a little hanky. And he is so much fun that he's so compulsively watchable. Whenever he's not on screen, I'm just thinking, where is he? Where's Val? I need him now. Because he is the best thing in this film by a million miles. And that's a hard thing to say when this film also stars Kurt Russell, you know? And Sam Elliott, who is just born to be a cowboy. He just looks like a cowboy. I think he was born with that tash.
Yes.
Literally, yeah. Out of the womb.
Yeah.
Straight out. And it had our mate Sandman in it, Thomas Hayden Church.
He was, yeah, yeah.
And Billy Zane.
Yep.
Yes, Billy Zane.
What I put down here, actually, is Kilmer is actually only in 31 scenes in the whole film, which is crazy. I counted it. I stood there. I didn't go on IMDb.
Did you have one of those little clickers?
Yes. Click, click, click. But every single of those scenes, he steals.
Yeah.
And I don't like knocking the dad of the podcast. I mean, Kurt Russell is the greatest actor for me, mm-hmm. up there with Bill Murray. I don't know who can decide the best, but honestly, Val Kilmer, you shouldn't take him seriously. He should have got an Oscar. Do you know what? Yeah, I've said it on every topic choice. This one is justified.
He should.
He
should have been best supporting actor. He is so good in this film. And one of the things I love about the film as well is it's a true story. Now, when it comes to things like the Wyatt Earp story, shit could have changed. You know, these things happened so many hundreds of years ago that I'm sure what we know now isn't the absolute gospel truth. But I like to see those real life stories. It adds a little extra element to me. So I love the fact that this was about Wyatt Earp basically deciding to stop being a lawman, moving to Tombstone to retire and make a few quid running a gambling parlour. But then he gets dragged back in when a gang of bandits ride into town. And then it leads up to the infamous shootout of the OK Corral. It's a great film and a great dramatisation of that well-known story.
I have two guns, one for each of you. And he's absolutely hammered. Mm. Unbelievable. Have you seen this film?
No.
Oh.
I'm doing crap.
Can we ruin it for you and say that he actually dies?
On, go on. Yeah. There you go.
It's heartbreaking. It is actually, oh no. See it.
I will too.
It's a really fun film.
It's my favourite ever Western.
Is it?
Yeah. Wow.
Absolutely love it. And it's again 1993.
Yeah.
The 90s nailed it.
See, that this is it though. This is what I was saying earlier. The 90s didn't nail it. The 90s had Tombstone and Unforgiven. They're basically the only Westerns that came out in that 10-year period.
That's all
they're two of the best ones. They're fantastic films. But it was still a time when you could not really get a Western made.
That is frightening.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's been probably 20 years until we got stuff like Bone Tomahawk. We haven't had anything. Yeah. I know we had True Grit, but it's only every sort of 3 or 4 years we get it.
But the last couple of years, we've been getting things like The Homesman, which was a really trippy, weird Western. We got that one with Mads Mikkelsen.
Oh, yes. I saw that. I can't remember what it's called.
No, I can't remember what it's called either. But that was
on a chase for an hour and a half.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And things like The Proposition. There's been a lot of really weird, quirky, interesting Westerns in the last 5 years or so.
Maybe we're seeing a new renaissance.
Well, I hope so, because I think it is my favourite genre of film.
Oh.
More than sci-fi,
I don't know, I don't know. It depends on the day.
How many Magnus has he had?
The thing is, like, sci-fi is a very, very broad spectrum.
Yes.
Whereas Westerns is narrower, you know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I probably do like sci-fi more, but that encompasses a lot more things. It's easier to like sci-fi, whereas Westerns very limited.
Isolated.
Yeah.
It's an isolated genre.
Yeah.
Final choice for you, isn't it, Jem?
Yeah, and final choice, I'm going to the 60s.
I'm going for Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
Good film.
Never seen it.
Oh, it's a very fun film. Very, very fun. And it's almost like a kind of cool counterculture approach to the Western genre. Mm-hmm. I mean, you got Paul Newman and Robert Redford playing the titular characters, and they're kind of shaggy haired, kind of like they've just come off of like the bus from Woodstock. They kind of have that kind of look, but they're just so seriously cool together, and they've got great chemistry. But the short arm of it, you know, they're part of the hole in the wall gang, you know, robbing trains, getting money as well. And Butch kind of has an idea of hightailing it over to Bolivia. That's where a lot of the cash is. So they decide to have this little plan in motion, but they're being tracked down by a posse who are only focusing on Butch and Sundance rather than their gang. Mm-hmm. So they hightail it over to Bolivia along with Sundance's girlfriend, Etta, who secretly is in love with Butch, let's face it.
Uh-oh, that spells trouble.
Mm-hmm. But there's a lovely sequence with them on bicycles with raindrops keep falling on my head. Which, by the way, was originally offered to Bob Dylan.
What, that song?
Yeah, you can imagine.
I can understand completely why he turned it down.
I would have liked to have heard him sing it. You wouldn't have heard the word he was saying.
The bumps,
saying.
Though, would have been all right.
It's true, down, isn't it? Yeah.
Have, not that he needs any more bumps.
He's got a few quid.
But the culmination of this film ends up, as all good Westerns, with a shootout as well. You know, I mean, spoiler alert. Well, I don't know, actually, spoiler alert, because it's down to you to decide whether they got shot or whether they got out of the situation. It's quite a touching moment at the end, mm-hmm. as well, because they're cornered. They realise, you know, it's either both of them together or none of them. And they kind of have plans to go to Australia for their next heist as well. So they decide, after tenderly bandaging each other's wounds, they go out in a blaze of glory, and the screen kind of freeze frames and then just goes into like this sepia tone. And sort of pans out to show them sort of escaping this hut. It's quite a touching moment. I think a lot of blokes might get a little bit teary eyed, but then again, their eyes might be leaking. There might be near onions. Who knows? But I just
a bit
thought,
dusty in the room.
Yeah, just my eyes are really sweaty today. But it's just a really cool film. It's a really cool Western. You know, it's not going through the typical kind of what you would see in, for example, The Searchers or High Noon. Mm-hmm. This is like a cool kind of two fingers up kind of Western.
I think that's why it doesn't make my list or get anywhere near my list. I enjoyed that film, but it's too cool for school. Mm-hmm. Trying to be, it's a bit too hip. And I like them nasty and gritty. I like my Westerns dirty.
I like a little stank on my Westerns.
See, it's amazing. You're saying this is your probably like your least favourite sort of genre, but just listening to you then, literally cool. Gushing. You're absolutely loving
Grab
it.
Grab them up, boys.
But it's true. Oh. You're just sitting there loving it. I'm watching your face. You can't see this, listeners, but she really is beaming about this film, and it's good.
It's awesome. The music is not typical Westerns. They're kind of 60s-esque kind of Burt Bacharach kind of feel, but it works.
Again, that's why I don't really like that.
If it had Deftones and Pantera, Ben would be like, this is the best film ever. Ben's final choice. You've had mine, so...
Yeah, my final pick is also from the 60s. Not only is it my absolute favourite Western, it's one of my favourite films of all time. If we did top 10 films of all time, it would absolutely be in my list, and it's knocking on the door of the five. It's The Good, the Bad and the Ugly.
Very nice.
Sergio Leone. There we go, yeah. That Ennio Morricone score is legendary. Legendary. It is fantastic. Sergio Leone was the king of the spaghetti Western. And this was the third in his Dollars trilogy. And for my money, it's the best one. So you've got The Good, which is Clint Eastwood playing the man with no name. You've got The Bad, Lee Van Cleef playing Angel Eyes, the villain of the piece. And then you've got The Ugly, which is the very not Mexican Eli Wallach playing the very Mexican bandito Tuco. And it's about them all going towards the same place, trying to hunt down this buried $200,000 of Confederate gold. And it's about the kind of scrapes they go through on the way. And it's a fantastic film because... Of those three guys, they're all so different. So Clint is in full-on cool Clint mode. He is the guy you want to be. He barely says a word because he doesn't need to. He just walks into a room. He's there. He fills the room with his presence. He's Clint, for Christ's sake. He doesn't need a name. You know, he just is who he is. Even when he's wearing a big green poncho, he is still cool.
He's wearing the fuck out of it.
Indeed. You've got Lee Van Cleef as the bad guy, and he is so menacing. He just has one of those faces. And it's really helped by the fact that Leone likes to film in close-up. And you've got that craggy, craggy evil face of Lee Van Cleef, who always gives good villain. But the film for me is stolen by Eli Wallach as Tuco. He is hilarious. It's not a comedy, but there's a lot about it that you can't help but laugh at, and it's all about him because he's just this angry little man who all he wants is this money, and he'll fuck over anyone he can to get it. It's so much fun, this film, and it's long. It's a long film. I think it's nearly 3 hours long, but you never at any point feel like it's dragging. You just want it to keep going. And then it culminates in that famous Mexican standoff in that kind of courtyard of the graveyard, where the three of them are all, you know, pointing their guns at each other, and it turns out that Clint had taken the bullets out of Tuco's gun the night before and all this kind of stuff. It's just brilliant. Anyone who hasn't seen this film, I'd, you know, like in A Clockwork Orange, where the guy's got the things in his eye, so he has to watch them. I want to do that to every human who's not seen this film. Oh. Force them to sit there and watch it.
Shall I book my appointment now?
I think you should. Oh, dear. Yeah, it's a masterpiece.
Listen to that.
And I say that without hyperbole. It is a legit masterpiece.
I honestly didn't know, and I've known you years, that it was rated that high by you. I just, because obviously we never talked about Westerns in this podcast for 2 years.
Yeah.
Mm. And what I loved about then is you said that you laugh and you can't help but laugh.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's crazy about this film, because it's this very serious film.
Yeah.
And that's, you shouldn't be laughing.
And apparently Clint wasn't a big fan of this film because he thought he was going to be the star of it. But it turns out that Eli Wallach's the star. He's in more scenes than anyone else, Tuco. Mm-hmm. And it's because in the making of the film, Leone just started to identify with his character and he started to like him more. So he kind of bumped up his role and gave him more to do to the detriment of the other characters. But it doesn't matter. It works for the film.
Yeah.
You know, you might want a bit more Clint here and there, but it's so much fun just watching Tuco do his thing.
Well, his imagery is just so iconic though from that film. I mean, you see it on the side of, like, you know, those fun fairs with like the crack kind of waltzes, and it's just like poorly spray painted. He's everywhere. He is synonymous with the poncho, the hat, and the cigar.
And a lot of the way certain things are shot, and even the introduction with the titles coming up on screen, you watch them and you go, ah, this is where Tarantino got everything from.
Mm-hmm.
Everything.
Yeah.
You know, he's a man who wears his influences on his sleeve. He just cribbed shit from Leone for years.
He'll openly admit it. Yeah. He won't be scared to say he watched them as a kid and a young teen.
And the thing is, if you're going to steal from the best. The thing that always makes me laugh about the spaghetti westerns, for those of you who don't know, they're called spaghetti westerns, generally speaking, because they were made by Italians. That's the reason for it. And often they would be filmed in Italy or Spain, wherever it was cheap to do so. And 90% of the cast, other than the main headliners, the cast would be local actors. So if you go and watch one of these spaghetti westerns, any of the Dollars trilogy, you'll notice that anyone that's not a main character clearly isn't speaking English. They would speak in their own natural tongue and then it'd be overdubbed in English. So the words never actually match the way their lips move. It's only people like Clint who is speaking English. Everyone else, they're speaking Spanish or Italian. And it's kind of daft and kind of off-putting, but charming. It charms me.
You've charmed me. So, Gemma.
Yes.
I was going to say, give it to me. That sounds wrong. Social media has been crazy this week, absolutely crazy. I'm waking up to so many notifications, but we appreciate it all. This has been one of the most popular topics because you've just seen so many people pulling titles out there.
Mm-hmm.
What have we got?
Okay, so we're going to start off with Dark Bunny Matt, our friend.
Good old Dark Bunny
Matt. At Matt Dark Bunny, he said, the good, the bad, and the ugly is
good
brilliant.
Good lad.
Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
Mm-hmm.
And Back to the Future 3 are close behind.
Mm, not sure about that.
I can't class that for me. It doesn't seem like... it's not that a great film, but it doesn't seem like... I know it's set as a Western, but it doesn't class as a Western.
It's not really a Western, is it?
But we love him, so he's the greatest choice ever, Matt.
Fine, Then we've got Daryl at DPC78. Once Upon a Time in the West.
Hell yes.
High Plains Drifter.
Yeah.
And Open Range. Hashtag Costner's Finest.
Yes.
So not a fan of Waterworld, that's for sure. Jim Void at JimVoid79. We've got High Plains Drifter, Unforgiven, and Young Guns.
Young Guns is awesome.
I wouldn't go as far as say awesome, but it's all right.
It's pretty damn good.
Simon Jeffrey at Primate Man said Jeremiah Johnson, Outlaw Josie Wells, and Big Jake.
Not seen any of those.
Nope. Outlaw Josie Wells is superb. Clint.
Just sounds like a list of exes for me. Benji Box at Benji Box said Bone Tomahawk is number one for sure. Then Rio Bravo and 310 to Yuma, the original.
Oh, see, I've not seen the original of 310 to Yuma. I have, however, seen the remake, which is a fantastic film.
Mm-hmm. Ben Foster, right?
Ben Foster kills it in that, as does Russell Crowe. Brilliant film.
Sudden Double Deep at SDD Film Podcast said for a few dollars more.
Yes.
The Quick and the Dead, which is kind of a guilty pleasure of mine.
Is that the woman western?
It's Sharon Stone and Leonardo DiCaprio.
I had a big crush on Leonardo DiCaprio.
The cast from Ghostbusters are remaking it next year.
And then his third choice is Hanny Calder.
I've not heard of that.
Nope. Not seen it.
Neither have I. And then lastly, we've got Nate at Nerds Chatting, at Nate_NerdChat. For a few dollars more, The Searchers and The Way of the Gun.
I've not seen The Way of the Gun. The Searchers is a fantastic movie.
Mm-hmm. Iconic.
It is iconic. I'm not a John Wayne fan. That's why, generally, I don't like the man. Mainly because of who he was in real life. He was an absolute so I find it difficult to like his work, but The Searchers is a hell of a film.
So I believe it's my topic choice on the next one. Yeah. So luckily this hopefully isn't going to require rewatching films that are 3 hours, 4 hours long. I tried to watch about 4 or 5 this week, and you know that's why I didn't watch Once Upon a Time in the West. I just did not have the time to revisit that. We kind of touched on this from a listener question about 6-7 episodes ago, and I thought, I'm going to keep that. So on the next episode, I want to do the top 3 revenge films.
Oh, very nice.
We've been to our local View Cinema to see the latest M. Night Shyamalan film, Split. Mm-hmm. See what I did there? I got the name right for once, which is not easy.
One syllable. Well done.
The film tells the story of a man with 24 distinct personalities, which is mind-blowing in itself. Mm-hmm. He then captures and takes hostage 3 young girls, and it's down to the 3 girls to work out which personalities will hopefully help them escape. Do they escape? Do they get murdered? What happens? Stick around for this review now, because in the next sort of 15-20 minutes, you will find out. This film, they are saying, is a return to form from a director that's been very respected. He's had very low moments where people have said he's lost it and he's no way back. He's done high budget, he's done low budget. This is going to be a big discussion here, and I can't wait, because we've just come out of the cinema. I have no idea again what these guys are thinking, and I'm going to throw it straight to Ben.
Mm-hmm. We're going to score the film at the end of this discussion, of course, but right from the off, I want to give James McAvoy a score of 10. He gets 10 for me. He is unreal. Playing a chap with 24 distinct personalities. I think we see in the film maybe 4 or 5 of them. Mm-hmm. But every time he changes from one personality to another, not only does he change his accent, like a few of them have kind of different variations on a New York accent, which is impressive that he can do different variations of one region of accent, but his whole... The way he holds himself changes. So, you know, one minute he's playing a guy called Hedwig, who's meant to be like a 9-year-old kid, and he's kind of daft and throwing himself around the room like little kids do. And then he becomes this prim and proper English woman, and all of a sudden he's sort of standing stock straight up. And then he becomes this kind of nasty OCD bloke, and he kind of firms up and his shoulders get seemingly broader. It's just these minor little changes in the way he stands and moves. It genuinely does seem like all these people are distinctly different. It's a mesmerizing, hypnotic performance from McAvoy. It blew me away.
Mm-hmm. Everything you just said, I completely agree. And yeah. I would like, and I don't think, but I'd love to see him nominated for an Oscar, because it's not the sort of film that will, and I'm just talking bollocks knowing that would happen, but it is worthy.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
it is.
It's not something you can do well. And then we joke and we think about Jim Carrey in The Mask, and he's 2 very split personalities. This guy's doing it with multiple.
Mm-hmm.
And you just said them with the accent. It's not just the accent. It's he made me believe he was disabled. Like you said, the way his eyes were and his whole persona, and he looked weak, like the most weakest person. And then this is the film I thought of straight away. When he went up to this big, monstrous, powerful beast. It reminded me of Red Dragon.
Yes, I was thinking the exact same thing.
Big time. And I thought, this guy's physique and the way he stood, but it's the same actor. He didn't have 6 months off to then go and get buffed for that scene. He's just the way he is. And I've never really rated him as a really great actor. I've just thought he's a solid actor. Mm-hmm. And now I've just completely, like, I want to see more of him. Like, he had that film in his hands for 2 hours, pretty much mostly him, 90% of him.
Yeah.
And I would just want to see more of him and more and more.
I really liked the first 3 quarters, but the last quarter I was done with it, and I thought, this is shit,
Mm-hmm. Wellity, wellity, wellity.
Sorry. No, I completely agree with everything you say about James McAvoy, because he is the shining North Star of this film. He's incredible. And you know what? Special props go to the girl Casey, played by Anya Taylor-Joy, who we've seen in The Witch and Morgan. She's got a bright future ahead of her.
Yeah, she was great.
She held herself really well. I was with the film until the beast arrived and I checked out, I'm afraid. It just got silly for me. Mm. It got really silly. I thought the doctor, Dr. Karen Fletcher, I thought she was hammy. I could not warm to her. I thought it didn't grab me. And the spoiler alert, obviously, she dies. She gets crushed to death by the beast and kind of gives her a good old hug. He just hugged her a little bit too tightly. Mm. I just thought that was ridiculous. So
I can kind of, I don't agree, but I certainly see where you're coming from. So for those of you who haven't seen this film, throughout the course of the film, we're aware that he has 23 personalities, and we see several of them, and they're all very much human, different in their own way, but all very much human. But then two of the dominant personalities keep talking about the fact that this 24th one is coming, the Beast. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the Beast is going to kill all these kids and whatnot. When the Beast finally arrives, he does have somewhat supernatural powers. He can bend steel bars. He can climb up walls like Spider-Man, all that kind of stuff. So I get completely why that would check you out. You know, if you're looking at a film on a purely human, somewhat realistic level, and then that wacky shit comes, I can understand completely why you would check out. The only reason why I didn't, and normally that is the sort of thing where I would check out, the only reason why I didn't is because there is a throwaway line or two earlier on in it where the doctor who dies, she's talking about how these people with these supposed mental problems could actually be the next kind of step in evolution, that they're tapping into the parts of the brain that us normal mortals can't. So that weird silliness at the back end of the film was kind of justified because they planted that seed earlier. Mm-hmm. That's how I've justified it to myself, anyway.
Well,
if it would have come clear out of the blue sky, I'd have been like, what is this bullshit?
Yeah.
But they at least tried to plant the seed. So I went with it. I was willing to suspend my disbelief for it.
And when he did actually go into full beast mode, it wasn't too much that he was flying. He just had, when he walked up the walls, yes, it looked a bit Spider-Man, but it wasn't too alien. It was all right for me. I kind of accepted that he could, because you could see him holding on to certain bits of the brick that were hanging out. It wasn't too bad. I know the bending of actual bars, then you think, okay, this is ridiculous.
Yeah.
But it wasn't too far away. He didn't suddenly like get magical powers where his whole hands have flames and stuff. I was still invested. I was all right. I think you're being harsh.
No, but for me, because it reminded me of Devil, another Shyamalan.
The word has lost all meaning now.
Cool beats.
The same director
did Devil, and it just reminded me of that because Devil is, I think it's one of the weaker of his films, and it just brought me back to that, and I just thought, no, it, for me it just didn't work. I'm really sorry, guys. I can't agree.
Why apologize to us?
Because I might get some hate on the old social media going, what are you talking about, you stupid so-and-so?
No, it's okay.
Good. I just didn't like it. I'm sorry.
A kind of a little bit of further justification for it came for me in the post-credits scene. Massive, massive spoiler here, but at the end of the film, the girls who McAvoy's character has trapped, two of them are dead, one of them manages to get away. The news are then reporting that this guy is now on the loose, McAvoy's character. And they've given him this... What name did they give him? The Horde, I think the press...
The Horde. Was it that?
And then you're in a diner and some woman says, oh, that reminds me of some other guy who they gave a wacky name 13 years ago. What was that? And then you pull back and there's Bruce Willis in character as David Dunn from Unbreakable saying, Mr. Glass.
Did you notice same music from Unbreakable?
Was it? I didn't even notice that.
Yep.
So I love that because then that says to me one of two things. Either this is just a throwaway little gag that Shyamalan threw in for his fans. It might well be that. But if it's not that, if it's meant to be more, what that says to me is this whole film, Split, was a supervillain origin story. And what we're going to get, hopefully, is then a sequel to this and then a sequel to Unbreakable, in which Bruce Willis's superhero character hunts down James McAvoy's supervillain character. If that's what that is, if that's what Shyamalan was doing, was saying, this is where I want to go from here, then he's got me. Mm-hmm.
Because Unbreakable...
Unbreakable is my favourite of his films, and to see them then do a sequel on that would be great. And because this film is really successful, as of this time of recording, it's the number one film in America. Mm-hmm. It was budgeted at $10 million, and it's made that back three times over already. So if he wants to make a sequel to this, the studio will bankroll it. I think it's Universal. They will bankroll it. So make it happen. That's what I want. If that's what's happening, if that's what this film was all about, it was a long supervillain origin story, I'm in. I'm sold.
I have to say, after the disappointment of, for me, the last quarter, that did kind of pull me back in. Mm-hmm. I was like, all right.
Yeah.
David's back.
How nice as well was it? Because me and Ben are absolute gits for reading up on spoilers and finding stuff out. Even IMDb until today hadn't put down that Bruce Willis was in this film.
Are you kidding me?
And me and Ben didn't even know. Ben sitting here didn't know that that was coming.
No. That's just...
Rare
that's
as
it.
Hell.
Exactly. Done. I was jaw to the floor. I was like, yes, I was so happy. It was just a great little punch to end the film.
Mm.
So this director, I just said then, has a lot of stick. Now, I've seen a lot of his... I don't like The Village. No. I didn't like it at all. I didn't like the one...
The Visit?
The Visit. Didn't like that at all. I thought it was terrible. And people said that was his return to form, and I didn't get it. I thought, this is dreadful. What was the one about the... Oh, my God, it's in the trees.
The
oh, God, that's the worst
there
film.
There is an event happening. And because the trees are going to kill us.
What's going on?
It's exactly that for an hour and a half.
God,
exactly. Shite.
We don't know.
And I did lose respect and thought, this guy can't bounce back. And I will say, even though you didn't like The Last Quarter, you know, The Last Bird, I think it's his return to form. And I think the budget, you could tell it was, it just felt like him again. That what I've noticed with him is his kind of thing that makes him. He does a lot of panning, left slow, left right. And that's what I saw in The Sixth Sense. And that's what I really enjoyed. I loved it when he did it again in Unbreakable. And he seemed to just stop all that and just kind of go off and try and do different things. That's what his trademark is. That's his stamp that makes him... I don't know, it just invests in me. As soon as it started the film and had a long, slow pan left and right of these girls, I thought, it's back. This is it. This feels like a Shyamalan film.
It is just like, as you say, the scene in Unbreakable. Right at the start of that film, when Bruce Willis's character is on the train and the camera pans across to him and then back around to the side and to some woman talking, then back to him, and that's when he starts to realise something's amiss and then the train crashes. It was that exact same shot. There was a kind of shot he did a lot in this film, and I don't really know his work well enough to know if he's done this before. But there were times when he obviously only wanted you to concentrate on one character. So there might be two or three characters in the frame, but only one of them, you could see their whole face. Sometimes someone would be talking and half their head would be cut off. And in the hands of a lesser director, you think that's a fucking rookie mistake. What are you doing? Frame it properly. But it was intentional. He wanted your focus to remain with the person who was important, not necessarily the person who was speaking. Really interesting directorial choice.
I also noticed as well, especially in the cell scenes, the camera was very close up to the characters' faces. So it gave that claustrophobic kind of feel to it, as if you were almost within that cell as well. And I did like that. And it made the intensity of these distinct personalities as well, like from Hedwig to Patricia to Dennis, even more terrifying as well. Like, really terrifying. Yeah. And I really loved that.
What I'm also really impressed with this film is it wasn't the big, right, 78 minutes have gone, now here comes the twist that you get in every bloody film of his. And I know we got the nice little post-credits thing, which is not really a twist, it's just a nice little, like a high-five sort of, like like the end of Marvel films. You go, this is worth staying for. We didn't get a big twist in this.
No, we didn't.
And that's quite a relief.
It was actually quite a more human ending as well, because one of the reveals of the film, due to flashbacks, is Casey is sexually abused by her uncle, played by one of the guards in Orange is the New Black, and he's not a very nice character in that show at all.
He's in Sneaky Pete on Amazon as well. Watch Sneaky Pete on Amazon, because it's amazing.
Casey?
Yeah, so good, that show.
On the list. Yeah. I'll do that. And even so, the ending showed that she didn't get to escape him. The paramedical, the policeman, says, oh, we've got in touch with your uncle. He's on his way to pick you up.
Mm-hmm.
She's not finished with her... With that kind of torment in her life, that's going to continue. So we don't see the happy ending from her. There's no happy ending.
I think one thing with her character that I didn't like is, so this beast has killed her two compatriots and then he's chasing her down. He's about to kill her, but then she takes her top off and he notices that she's covered in scars because she's clearly been self-harming. And then he's kind of like, well, you're a kindred spirit. I can see that you're broken like me. So he lets her live. And I think that's a bit of a shitty cop-out.
Got that on my notes as well. Mm-hmm. I didn't like that either.
That you cut yourself as well. Your name's Martha. My mum's Martha.
Yeah.
It's exactly that, isn't it?
It's too convenient, isn't it?
I did not like that at all.
Yeah.
An hour and a half as well of chasing someone, I would finish the job. You know what I mean? He's done two of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I just love how unpredictable each of the personalities was. You got a feeling that you kind of knew them over the time. So with Hedwig as well, you know, this silly little boy who likes nothing more than dancing to Kanye West in his bedroom.
There was laugh out loud moments during that, and there shouldn't be, but it just tickled you.
Like him using the word et cetera all the time.
Yeah. But as as the story goes on, you realise that there is no safety with these three particular characters, especially Patricia, who, when you first meet Patricia, you think of this character as a matron kind of character, someone who's going to look after you to make sure these girls are okay. She's the bloody mastermind behind this, the beast coming. She's willing the beast to come.
Yeah.
And James McAvoy. What? More McAvoy.
More McAvoy.
What is he doing now?
He was on Graham Norton the other week.
Oh, okay. So that's the only time we didn't see him.
Yeah.
We hopefully get some more lead roles, because he doesn't really get the lead, does he? He's always sort of the support, or he's in a group of ensemble.
And,
so,
I read that he actually got this role because Joaquin Phoenix turned it down.
That still would have been good.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But I'm glad he was given the chance to shine in this.
I think for me, one of the McAvoy treats that he's done in his past career, he did a film called Filth.
Amazing film.
Which, again, he is the lead. And, got to watch that, because he's great in that as well.
Great film, great book.
This film also needs some credit for the sound and the score and everything else that goes with it. In the last few films, he's been quite low budgeted, especially that one where he goes and stays with the grandparents. I'm done with it. You know, it made me want to spit.
But this, spit, not split.
Yes, and exactly that. And in this film, I was listening to like the sound effects, and it works so well. It reminded me of like something you get from like Interstellar, which, not the bad points of Interstellar, really kind of gave you that ambience, and that atmosphere was building up. And then when the personalities came, you had those drums in the background and the kind of real boom, 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 and it really helped. And I thought, this guy's really now took back everything he did so well. And I think he just forgot everything. I think he's got 24 personalities, and I'm trying not to swear as much. But he's lost it. He lost it, and he's back. He's finally come back. He's gone, should do something shit next.
He's gone back to basics. He had too much success too soon, I think, and it gave him creative control to follow all these flights of fancy. He needed to just get back to basics and be grounded again, and just go back to the kind of the tight thrillers, the tight suspense films that he was good at.
I think he just needs to work out how to end a film properly. Sorry about it.
But he's done Wayward Pines, and he's been working hard on that. So he's probably took some time out, really kind of just got grounded again. Not let it get away from him. Anything else you want to say on this one?
I'm done.
I'm ready to score it.
I am quite surprised. It's one of those ones where Ben would normally shock me with, oh, he didn't like it.
Yeah, sorry. But...
go on then, go first. It's going to be a low bar.
I'm going to give it a very fair 6 out of 10, and it's because of James McAvoy's performance, and as well it's because of Anya Taylor-Joy. I think she's certainly one to watch.
Ben?
I would have given this a 7. I think it's fair to say this film is a solid 7. But I'm going to give it one bump up. I'm going to give it an 8, purely because McAvoy was so good and Bruce freaking Willis turned up at the very end. That gets a whole extra point for me. So I'm going to give it 8.
I'm going to go 7. Everything you both said, I think the payoff to see Ben literally turn around to me and go, oh my God. And if you are listening to the podcast, please make that film now, because we want Unforgiven 2.
I'd love Unforgiven 2, but Unbreakable 2.
Unbreakable 2 would be even better.
That'll suffice.
I caught Lily an hour in without making a fuck up.
And you just said you weren't going to swear.
So what's that, a 6?
7.
A 7. So it's a 7.
Yeah.
Overall then, Split gets a 7 out of 10. Competition time.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not going to tease. I'm going to go straight in there with it. The people want it. They're going to keep getting it. I keep seeing tweets and people saying it. And it's like the entries that come through on email are just not the subject headers. Competition time.
They literally do it phonetically. It's incredible.
Note to all the listeners, if you do put competition time, you've got more chance of winning. If you listened to our last episode, we gave the chance to win a Ricky Gervais signed CD and DVD for the latest film, A Life on the Road. Or Life on the Road. Maybe a Life on the Road, Life on the Road. And the question I put out there to win this was, name the band that David Brent heads up in the film and also in The Office. So, Gemma?
Foregone Conclusion.
Brilliant. And the winner is Matthew Webb on Facebook, so you'll be getting that. And if I see it on eBay, we'll be coming around and spanking you. You'll be, oh, you're doing it on purpose now.
Going in with a right hand.
Also, thanks to our good friends at Dark Bunny T-shirts, that's Dark Bunny, they gave us the Star Wars T-shirt for Rogue One, a male and a female one. And the question we put out there was, who played Cassian in the film Rogue One? Ben?
Diego Luna.
Fantastic. And the winner is Scott Tucker. on Facebook and also at SS7Tux on Twitter. So we'll be getting in contact with you to get that sorted. And we had a competition for the new film Sing by Universal, which you've seen, Gemma. I keep saying this,
but you never
tell us what you think. So now it's out. Is it good?
I actually really enjoyed it, yes.
Good. And I heard that Edgar Wright does a voice of one of the characters. But you didn't know that, did you?
Which one does he do?
Not going to tell you.
Oh,
but yeah, he does a cameo. Yeah, he did a very secret cameo for it. That's pretty good. And all you have to do is leave us an iTunes rating. So Alex Sanders, Hayley Bishton and James Hartwright all gave us iTunes ratings. And we really appreciate that. And you'll all be getting a bundle.
Thank you.
So let's give some more stuff away. Dark Bunny noticed we were doing a Donnie Darko rewatch. Have you seen their new hoodie with fleecy hood and the t-shirt?
Yeah.
They're giving us another bundle to give away because this has been our most popular. Over 1,000 retweets this week for that competition.
Wow.
Which is insane. Let's make it really easy. We're going to give both away. So one t-shirt, one hoodie. Who directed Donnie Darko? But if you want to win them together as a bundle, what rating did we give Donnie Darko on last week's episode?
Oh, nice.
That's the proper hardcore sort of stuff. And I've said, because of the amount of demand we get, we've got one final Sing bundle. They're giving us like 14 now, and this is the final one. And this has been our most popular competition of all time, apart from winning the Skip Down t-shirt and Kieran. Just leave us an iTunes rating again. That's all you're going to have to do, and we'll pick it out. It's up to you.
Nope.
But if you don't put a 5, you ain't winning shit. We'll announce all the winners again in 2 weeks' time.
It's now time for Movie Masturbate, one of our favourite little segments on the show where we get to wax lyrical about our favourite performance from a particular actor or actress that we take from the Goblet of Fire. And on last week's episode, we chose out the one and only, and I cannot wait to hear your guys' reactions, Nicolas Cage.
Oh, yes.
Nicolas bloody Cage. And how did you find your research for this particular chap?
I'm going to be nice now instead of being the usual. We ripped him to pieces when we did Absolutely tore him a new one. But when I went on IMDb for this and looked at the amount of stuff he's done, I remember Ben saying last week there's 3 stages to Nicolas Cage. One where he cared, one where he's absolutely off his head allegedly and all over the shop, and one where he's got a tax bill. But you have to give the guy credit. There's a lot of good stuff.
Yeah.
It wasn't like, oh, it's definitely that one. I got it down to about 3 or 4 in the end.
Wow.
And I was like, do you know what? I watched a few, and that we'll come to this in a minute, but I've got to give him more credit. He actually has a lot more than I didn't realise.
He does. When we first picked the name out of the bowl, the film that came into my mind straight away, I was like, oh, that's got to be my pick. And then I went and looked on IMDb, and I was surprised by how many films of his I really enjoy. Even if the films aren't that great,
He's
always good in them. He's always good value. Mm-hmm. Even if he's overacting wildly and hamming it up, he's always good fun to watch. But then I ended up going with my first pick anyway, because it was just too good to not go with.
He's a good time guy. Mm-hmm. And we like that. So the first person who's going to go up, let's have a look. Let's go, Mark.
I think I'm going to shock you here. So I watched it this week. Vampire Kiss.
Me too! Yes!
I don't even know what that is.
Oh, it's going to change your life.
A Vampire's Kiss.
Yeah.
Yes. It's one of the funniest films I've seen in years.
I'm a vampire! I'm a vampire! I'm a vampire!
When is it from?
Oh, the 80s.
Yes.
Is it?
One of his very early roles. So this film hasn't got anything to do with vampires in it. There's not a single vampire throughout the whole film. He is basically a guy that loses his mind. It's unbelievable. He sleeps around and thinks that he's been like possessed, doesn't he?
Bitten
by this one night stand sort of slut. And that's fair, because it is. She's someone that sleeps around a lot.
She's a bit trampy.
And Nicolas Cage produces this performance that is so mental, and that is the word I'm going to say, and I've put here, it's the god of overacting in performances.
Yeah. Yeah.
You've never seen anything like, you know, normally we've seen some stuff by him that's absolutely crazy.
Mm-hmm.
This is on a whole new level. Unbelievable. I can't believe you've not seen this.
Oh,
no,
so
I don't even think I've heard of it.
It's like a fantasy film as well. He's split into two different parts. Come on, tell me why you love it as much as me.
Oh my God. When Nicolas Cage goes full Nicolas Cage, we are the winners, first and foremost. He's insane. But then you could argue and say, you know, you watch it and the film's not great. It's not a masterpiece, let's face it. However, you could watch his reactions
First time you watch it, you think, God, he's terrible. But as you watch it, you go, well, actually, it's actually quite a clever move, because he does go into a delusional state at one point, doesn't he, in the film? And you could argue and say, well, this is a man losing his mind right in front of us. And that's what makes this performance so great. It is so much fun. It's just, I mean, to the point where he's popping in a pair of plastic teeth in the club, going, pretending to be a vampire. Or one of my favourite points is when he attacks Alva, his secretary. And she's packing a gun with blanks, so he tries to kill himself with this gun and fails. And he just does this wonderful way when he's, like, breaking down, and he just sort of cries and goes, "Bah!" If you ever want to, like, see any of, like, his best bits from this film, Google Nicolas Cage loses his shit. It is 6 minutes of pure enjoyment. Please do. You'll thank me later.
He goes to this disco to find this girl to drink her blood, and I think it's on the way or afterwards, he eats a pigeon.
He does!
he eats a pigeon off the street.
Because why not?
He thinks he's a vampire. Yeah. This is one you've got to watch.
Yeah, I will. I absolutely will.
Possible rewatch in the future, maybe?
That's a great idea, but well, maybe not. I just want to hear his thoughts in a couple of weeks.
All right,
but honestly, I've never seen a performance so over the top, and he is the king of it, but it's another whole level. Mm-hmm. He should be knighted for it.
Yeah, he goes balls out on this one.
Absolutely mental film.
I will certainly check that out. My pick is a more recent one. So as you mentioned there, Mark, the thing I talked about last week was the three distinct eras of his career. The second era was the coke-fueled era, allegedly. I'm not saying he necessarily was on coke, but he certainly seemed like he was in all of his films. And I think the film that kicked that era off for me was Face Off.
Oh,
amazing.
He is in this film as both Castor Troy and Sean Archer. For those of you who don't know, he plays Castor Troy, who is this horrible villain, and his nemesis is John Travolta, who plays Sean Archer, an FBI agent. Because this is the most batshit insane film that's ever been made, for some reason, Travolta's character decides to put Nicolas Cage's character's face on his head to pose as him, but then Cage's character, who was in a coma, wakes up, and so he puts John Travolta's face on.
We've all been there. It's the classic tale of every day.
It is completely batshit, and it doesn't hold up to scrutiny whatsoever. It doesn't make a lick of sense. It is mental, especially because they're then supposed to pass for one another, have completely different body shapes. Like, John Travolta is packing a few pounds, you know, and he's also, I think, two inches taller than Cage. So, but apparently that doesn't matter. As long as you swap faces, you're golden. No one will notice that you're completely different humans. But the best thing about this is that Cage gets to play two roles, and he hams them up massively. So when he's Castor Troy, when he's the villain, he is just the most mustache-twirling villain you will ever see. The first scene you see of him at the start of the film, he's gone into some sort of bishop's conference or something, and he's dressed up as a bishop, and there's a gospel band singing, and he's dancing around and sort of headbanging to them. And then he goes to one of the young women singing on the front row and grabs her ass, just because he can, because he's Nicolas Cage and he's a mental. And then when he swaps faces, he then becomes Sean Archer, who's this kind of hard-done-to family man FBI agent, and then he's kind of all weepy and all sad and weak, and it's these two extremes, and it's so much fun watching him, and not just him, but him and Travolta, because Travolta gets to play two roles as well, and as well as playing two characters, they're effectively doing impressions of each other. It's Nicolas Cage doing his best John Travolta and vice versa, and it is phenomenal to watch. I love this film. It's, you know, it's not a great film, really, but because it's so out there and so wild and weird, the characterization from these two. Travolta and Cage are just chewing the scenery all day long. They're two of the biggest hams in the game, and they absolutely kill it in this. And it's a John Woo film, so it's full of great action, as you'd expect, full of slow-mos and violent gunfights and acrobatic shootouts and all this kind of stuff. It's so much fun, and Cage is amazing in it.
My favourite scene of the whole film is when they're actually going in to have the faces removed and swapped. And it's like that sort of Vader moment when he's on the floor on episode 3 and they're lying down and it sort of rises. But they cut round it and they lift it, don't they? And then you see them, like, the hands cross over and slowly lower down, and the laser just suddenly fixes it. And it's just that cheesy 90s sort of, you know it's just ridiculous. But I think you nailed it there by saying, like, he kind of, like, ramps it up a new level, knowing that probably Travolta has to kind of replicate it. Mm-hmm. So it's a great film.
Yeah. It is.
And then it's not amazing, but it's fun. It says what it is meant to be. It's not meant to be Oscar-worthy. It's stupid, but action.
Yeah, and I feel the same way about this that you two guys feel about Vampire Kiss. It's one of those where I just feel people have to see it. I can recommend this film to you. Even people don't like action films and whatever. They just need to see it just to see Cage and Travolta going up to 11. Mm. Just going full pelt.
Yeah. I could eat a peach for days.
I really want to watch that again now.
Me too.
It's a great film. It's a long film as well. It's over 2 hours long.
God.
I didn't think that. I thought it'd be about an hour and a half. Being on pizza
standard. Minimum.
Yeah.
Mm.
Do you want to hear what social media said?
Yes.
Well, a lot. Hell of a... I couldn't even fit them all in on this episode, seriously. So we've got... At Kevin Wright Stuff has said, I've got to go with Bad Lieutenant.
Yeah.
He just thinks it's absolutely perfect and it's a glorious combination. It is a great film. It is really good.
He's absolutely wild in that.
Tanya Bonsai has said Lord of War. Surprisingly good watch.
Ooh. Very good
film. Wasn't that one of your favourite something?
Best the introduction.
Yeah. Oh, let's see. We get them all in.
Mm.
At Benji Box has put Adaptation. Spike
Jonze. Great film.
And I think that is a really good performance of acting. He actually puts his heart and soul into it. That's before the Coke.
It was.
Oh, no, it was after.
I think it was after. It was just a rare.
Coca-Cola, good, that is. Yes. You know, he really loved fizzy drinks.
It was a rare good acting performance for him in the latter days. He was nominated for an Oscar for that, I believe.
He was.
Bloody hell. Roy Barrett has said The Weatherman, a real gem that not many people have seen.
I haven't seen it.
I've heard of it, but I've never seen it.
There you go. He's point proven.
Mm.
Killing Joke Told, Vampire's Kiss.
Yes.
Or if you're looking for less overacting, The Rock.
The Rock's more. All right. Rock's it all right. Is. Yeah. But I love more Cage.
At Gordon Don, Matchstick Man.
I've never seen that one.
Never seen it.
I haven't either. And finally, Susie Bederson, who said Stanley Goodspeed, which is obviously from The Rock. So that's a really popular choice. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's up there with sort of Armageddon and those sort of films. I don't mind those films. They're all right.
Yeah.
I think it's time to masturbate again. So it's time for me to put my fingers in the fountain of love juice.
That makes no sense. Do you want a drum roll?
Yes, please. So, on the next episode of the Skip to the End podcast, we will be masturbating over Ben Affleck.
Oh, no! My goodness!
What the hell are you talking to him for? He can't hear a fucking thing.
I ain't talking to him. I'm talking to myself. It helps me think.
It's rewatch time. Can't really do it like competition time, so that is your thing.
I will sue you.
I know.
I don't give a shit if you're my co-host. I will sue your ass.
I'm sending the skit to the end, lawyers. They are scary as. But it's rewatch time. And on the last episode, I chose One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, which is a very iconic 70s film directed by Milos Forman and starring people such as Jack Nicholson, Louise Fletcher, and a very young Danny DeVito and Christopher Lloyd. So the story is we meet Randall P. McMurphy, who is played by Jack Nicholson, who has a bit of a decorated criminal past. He's currently serving time in a correctional facility. However, he is transferred to a mental institution after pleading insanity. We learn that he simply wants to get out the hard labour inflicted in the prison, and he believes that life in a hospital will be a bit more of an easy life for him. What McMurphy doesn't expect is the comradeship he encounters with fellow patients and the all-out battle with the fearsome and cold Nurse Ratchet. And that is the film.
I don't know what comradeship means.
Comradeship? Oh, have I gone to the Marx School of vocab?
Definitely made that one up.
It's definitely now a gemerism. And I've seen people saying online that you are doing it more than me now. So, you
that
know.
That is complete and utter bullshit.
Well, you've done very well. You do better than I do with ever trying to summarise a film.
Oh, I don't know about that. but that's the initial crux of the film, really. And so it's no secret that this is one of my favourite films of all time. Mm-hmm. It's in my top five. And why am I kidding? I love it. But I'm more interested about what you both have to say about it, because this is a first watch for
you
guys?
Yes, yeah.
Yep, when I remembered it, because at uni I did not remember any of this film.
Super duper. So I want to throw this to Ben first, so I'd love to get your reaction on this.
I want to quite literally skip to the end of this film. So this film, in some sources I see it referred to as being a drama. In other sources, including Wikipedia, I see it referred to as a comedy drama. And it is very funny in parts. There's one scene where they're playing basketball, the inmates versus the orderlies, and it's hilarious. Jack Nicholson just shouting at them because Danny DeVito throws the ball at the fence rather than to him. There are a lot of laugh-out-loud moments. But then you get to the end, and the last, let's say, 20 minutes or so of the film are some of the darkest, bleakest stuff I've ever seen committed to celluloid. Like, makes you want to top yourself. It's that dark. So how this film kind of winds up is Jack Nicholson's character, he wants to escape this mental hospital, so he throws a bit of a party. He brings a couple of his prostitute friends. He then gets one of his prostitute friends to sleep with this young lad, Billy, to lose his virginity. Nurse Ratched then turns up the next day, says that she's going to tell Billy's mum. Billy then goes and kills himself, which is absolutely brutal. He slices his throat with a piece of broken glass. Then Jack Nicholson's character gets carted off for electroshock therapy. When they bring him back, it turns out he's been lobotomized. His mate, the chief, then decides to put him out of his misery and smothers him with a pillow. And it's just like, how much more misery? You know, suicide, lobotomization, and then murder.
In 15 minutes.
15 minutes. Jesus Christ, it's dark.
What I didn't see coming was the smothering and the death scene, because I've been ignorant with this film. It's one of those ones that was on the list, I need to see it, and I just kind of didn't push myself to do it.
Yeah.
I went into this film hearing that it's one of the only films ever in history for top five Oscars, winning every single one.
Yeah, the other two, Silence of the Lambs and It Happened One Night.
Exactly that. And it's mind-blowing to know that, you know, the expectation then for me is going to be high. Oh, okay, best actor, best screenplay, best film, best director. This can't be shit. But like Ben said, I was watching it thinking, because I've seen a rendition of this on Spaced when they're doing a whole episode dedicated to this.
Yes.
And I was like, okay, I get the idea now. The chief Indian guy doesn't say anything, but he's had them all and he's done a bit of a swerve. But what the fuck? Like, he dies. And I don't expect that. I was like, this is the hero. This is the guy that's going to save them all and release them all. And they're all going to be fine. And okay, they might, some of them, be mental, but they're still free to not, they have this imprisonment and this horrible feeling of being tied down. He dies.
And
I was feeling shit about myself at that point. I was like, Gemma, this is harsh. But I respect it and love it and think, hats off, this is why this film deserves all the awards. But I didn't see that coming, man.
It's a very symbolic gesture as well. If you notice, when the chief says, come on, I'm not going to leave you behind, let's go. And it's a symbolic way of making sure that he's not in that vegetative state anymore.
And that's it for Skip to the End. Thank you very much for listening. We've had a great couple of years. I'm going to go and jump out the window and just keep walking to a soundtrack.
I think Will Sampson, who plays the chief, doesn't get enough credit for this. When people talk about this film, obviously they're going to talk about Nicholson because he's the star of it and he's one of the greatest stars of all time. People talk about young Danny DeVito, young Christopher Lloyd, but Will Sampson as the chief is so good. He doesn't speak for the first hour and 23 minutes of the film. And when he does, when you find out that he's not deaf and dumb, but he has these really kind of wise words and just this very laid-back style. He's brilliant. And in that scene when he has to kill Nicholson, heartbreaking.
He's just incredible in that as well. And then you get the sense of, you don't think throughout the film that the chief really has any allegiances or really cares for Randall at all. But until those last 15 minutes, you realise that Randall meant the world to him.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about it. We have to talk about it. Let's uplift it a bit.
Okay.
Jack Nicholson.
Yeah. Oh,
now, I obviously associate Jack Nicholson, really, for me, as the Joker. That's one of his main... When I think of Jack Nicholson, I always think of that grin, and the portrayal he did of the Joker is magnificent. I know people argue and say, Heath Ledger, I don't care who's better. It was that Tim Burton just pulled this performance from nowhere. This felt like an audition for the Joker at times, with the eccentric and the mental kind of just randomness he's like, and the sort of arrogance he had at times, but also just the opposite. I not often see a film that has that much hype and think it's not going to live up to it. It did blow my mind. I just thought, I love this actor, he's up there, but we never talk about him much on this podcast, do we?
He's in the pot of plenty, though. We will pull him out for Mass Debate one day.
That's good. But he deserves so much credit. Like we a couple of weeks ago did 2001, and we talked all about the direction and how Kubrick is the man. Nicholson is also the man. He is in the top 10 actors of all time. He's join me in spaffing, guys, because come on, Ben.
I love Jack Nicholson. I love it especially when he plays cocky characters, because he just has an innately cocky face, because he has those wonderful arched eyebrows
and a permanent smile.
Yeah, that big grin and those eyebrows, and he just always looks a bit smug and a bit cocky. So when he's that kind of guy who doesn't give a shit about anyone but himself and, you know, fuck the establishment, I love him in that mold.
He makes a great arsehole.
He really does, and he's so much fun in this. One of the first scenes you see him is when he first comes into the mental institution, and he's with the doctor and he's trying to explain how he got there, and he's just such a smug dick about the whole thing. It's so much fun. And a lot of that scene apparently was ad-libbed.
It does not surprise me.
Really good stuff.
Mm-hmm. He's just magnetic in this. He holds your concentration for the duration of the film as well. You are almost, I wouldn't say you are Randall, but you arrive at the hospital the exact same time as him. So you experience mm-hmm. exactly what's going on through his head and almost sort of how he views the rest of the hospital. And of course, the feud that he has with Nurse Ratched as well. Mm-hmm. You go through that as well because you realize, my God, this is a stone cold bitch.
Big time.
There is no heart. There is no love. And I read how Louise Fletcher actually played Nurse Ratched as well. And what her justification for it was, she cared so much for the patients that she got blindsided by the power. Hence why she has this very cold exterior about her. But as Randall, as the viewer, you understand exactly why this woman is so fearsome, terrifying. Mm-hmm. And she's one of the greatest villains, I think, ever in movie history.
And she manages to be villainous without being outwardly villainous. Yeah. She's just more passive aggressive than anything else. But her face never changes. Mm-hmm. She barely blinks. Her expression doesn't change. She's always just very cold and very stern.
Yeah.
It's a great performance.
And there's not been much from her. You know, it's like she did this amazing performance. And
yeah, I do remember she was in a bit part in Cruel Intentions. She was Reese wow. Witherspoon's aunt.
Oh, that's God. What I mean. That's what her career's come to. And Jack Nicholson obviously went off and did loads more and became one of the greatest of all time. Mm-hmm. So it is crazy because she deserves a lot of credit for that performance. And to go up against Jack Nicholson in scenes mm-hmm. when he's killing it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she isn't looking shit. She's up there with him.
Yeah. This is the thing, because an actor of his ferocity can steamroll people who are his scene partners. He's so strong-willed that it's hard to hang with him. But she does.
Yeah. And she does nothing. Mm. She doesn't acknowledge. She doesn't smile. That the surface never cracks. It's a veneer that's almost porcelain. And it can't crack until probably the first time we ever see her smile is at the very end when she's in the neck brace asking the inmates if they've had a good day.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. The very end scene.
I love the rest of the characters as well, especially how the remaining inmates come to form a bond with Nicholson's character. And I think the best example of this is when he sneaks them all out and they go on a fishing trip. And it's just the way they're all interacting with each other on the boat and they're this little unit together.
And he calls them all doctors
except the one guy. He's a dick. Yeah.
But it's good. And just again, that scene, it's so nice, isn't it, Ben, to watch a film and not have, I don't know, not just these rewatches for us, but they don't spoil anything for us. Mm. These first time viewings, when people are screaming, probably listening, like, you call yourself a podcast and you've not watched this. That's good,
human,
man.
Yeah.
That's awesome that we get to experience this for the first ever time. We get listener questions all the time. If you could ever go back and have a film wiped away and experience it the first time, we've had some of these experiences. You know, it's unbelievable.
Yeah.
It really is. And it's one of those films now, again, Gemma, you joined the podcast and you gave your top five. As soon as you announced this, I thought, we need to do this as a rewatch at one point. And then you pulled it out of the bag and it's your moment, you know?
it is one of those that it's embarrassing, really, that we'd not seen it prior to this point.
But I think I'm quite jealous, though.
Yeah, I mean, it's great. As Mark's just explained, it's great that we're now getting to live through it for the first time. And, you know, we have the ability to discuss it on a very popular podcast as well. But, you know, it's kind of speaks poorly of us that we hadn't watched it prior to now. And as I say, you said it exactly right. It's one that's been on my list. I've just, for whatever reason, not got round to it. I've just not felt in the mood at any point. But I'm so glad that I've had a reason to watch it now.
It's exactly like Monster Trucks.
it's exactly the same as that. Yeah.
In an alternative universe. It's just one of those films that actually made me fall in love with cinema, if I'm absolutely honest. Mm. And I think I saw this probably when I was maybe my first year of university. I got to a point because I studied film studies and I had a list of all of these films I decided I wanted to watch. And this didn't even make the top. This is one of these films where I sort of, you know, saw in lists and I thought, I'll give it a go.
Yeah.
And it changed my life. It changed the way how I actually viewed films. And it gave me an appreciation that is still to this day very much with me. And I have to thank, you know, Milos Forman. I have to thank Jack Nicholson and Louise Fletcher for bringing this story to life and making it a film that I love so, so dearly. And I'm always happy to recommend it to anybody who's not seen it.
And it is a film that gets parodied a lot. So you've mentioned the parody in Spaced. There's also a parody in season 4 of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, which of course co-stars Danny DeVito.
Martini!
So check out that episode.
And Futurama as well. We've got a robot that looks exactly like Nurse Ratched. It's imitation is the sincerest form of flattery.
Yeah.
Yes. So is there anything else you can really say? I mean, I loved it, and I'm grateful for that, Gemma, because we've had times on this podcast where we have stitched each other up, and it's a nice trend now that we're not doing that anymore.
I'm
very scared when that comes up.
But these classics that we're banging out now, it's just unbelievable.
Mm-hmm. And I really hope that everybody that is listening to this has enjoyed this rewatch, hopefully as much as we have.
Mm-hmm. I saw some tweets this week of people that went and bought it.
Wow. Ready,
and I, you know.
That's awesome.
It's very cool. So,
I really like that.
Let's go for scores. I don't want to go you to go first, Gemma, because it'll be obviously high.
Wow. Oh, I wonder what I could go for.
Ben.
I enjoyed it very much. Because I've only seen it once, it's not going to get a top score, but it's one of those I think that when I see it a second time, a third time, it will gradually work its way up. For now, it's an 8. I could definitely see it getting higher than that in time, but for now, 8 out of 10.
Exactly that. I don't want to be an echo, but I can't say it's a 10. Come on, it's not La La Land.
I'm into that.
An 8 is very good.
Yes.
For a rewatch of a first ever time viewing of a film that's many, many years ago, Jack Nicholson kills it, 8.
And it's a bit of an obvious one. I'm going to give it to you. It's a 10 for me. I think I've given my reasons. I don't really need to go over them again. So 10 out of 10 for me.
Should we give it a 9 overall?
I'm happy to bump it up for that.
Yeah.
Okay. That's a bloody good rating.
That is. So One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest gets a 9 out of 10. And who's next?
Ben.
It is me.
Whoa.
I'm going to do something a little bit different.
Uh-oh.
I'm going to switch it up a little bit.
Uh-oh.
We're going to review, or rewatch, I should say, 2 movies.
What?
Yeah.
Holy hell.
And there's a reason for this. The first film that we're going to rewatch is Christopher Nolan's trippy 2010 thriller Inception.
Oh my God.
Wow.
Yeah. Yes. It's a film that deserves a deep dive. There's a lot to discuss, a lot to break down in that film. But in doing so, what we're also going to do is we're going to compare it to another film, a film that a lot of people have said charitably that inspired Inception. And a lot of people have said not very charitably Nolan ripped off for Inception, and it is Satoshi Kon's mesmerizing 2006 anime film Paprika.
Oh my God, I've not seen that in years,
and it's amazing. So we're going to watch Inception and Paprika and compare and contrast.
Wow.
Oh my God,
and I've never seen Paprika.
It's so good. Fast and Furious time, and not only that, it's the final. Dun, 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 dun.
And we're all still in it to win it.
We are. Oh,
yeah.
That's true, actually, yeah. So we've got the Titans. I've skipped to the end because I'm still a bit new, so I think that's fair. A Titan in training.
Founders.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Missionaries.
I know you're a big fan of missionaries.
Brain.
But if you're talking about in terms of quiz wins, you've won more than he has. Oh, you're more of a Titan than he is.
Oh, I like this. I'm standing on the shoulders of giants right now. Ugh. Yes.
Get back down to where you belong now.
Hey, it's good if you're on top, Mark. So, as you probably have guessed, it's Ben versus Mark this week as well. So it really is everything to play for. And kind of giving you a bit of a summary on what Cast and Furious is. We are going to be putting Ben and Mark head to head. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to give 5 names of stars that have been into a film. So the first name I give is 5 points, second name is 4 points, and so on until we get to the very last one, which is 1 point. So the guys have got to guess exactly which film these stars have starred together in. Are we ready?
Yes.
What happens if one of us shouts out?
Oh.
Then what happens?
Oh, I was just going to let it go. But I suppose now you've mentioned it, if somebody shouts out and the answer is incorrect, you are locked out. And then it goes to the other person.
I'm tense because it...
Right?
I did... And you will happily say this.
Yeah.
Absolutely annihilated you 11-4.
Well...
So it is true. Like,
and Gemma annihilated me 10-3. I think.
I know. Yes. It's they've a not weird
seen,
one.
They've not seen a beating like that since Joe Pesci in Casino.
Nice. I just want to say that I've spent the whole week, I've called in sick every day and read IMDb for 12 hours a day, every film combo that you could get. So if I don't win this, it's been a waste of a sick week.
Let's hope the employers aren't hearing. But we're going into the arena. This is it.
This is tense.
Right.
Give me another swig of my Magnus.
Okay. Get a bit of that original.
Let's do this.
Right. You guys ready?
Yeah.
So the first one. And I've got to say it in a way how you guys have been doing it.
Yes.
So, right. Seth Rogen.
Not his name.
Oh, fuck, it's not, is it?
No, it's fine. Seth Rogen, yeah. That is a Gemma-ism.
Yeah.
All week I've been practicing to say Rogen. Christ. So that's number one. Any guesses?
No.
No.
No? Okay, next one. Jonah Hill.
Any guesses? Oh, Mark's looking twitchy. You can have a guess.
No.
No? Okay. So number three. Bill Hader.
See, I know what I think it is, but I don't want to shoot my load.
I'm going to have a guess.
Go for it.
This is the end.
Locked out. I'm afraid not. So, Ben, you ready for the next one?
Or shall I guess? No, go on. Sure. I'll get the next one. I'll try and take an easy point.
Okay, the next one. Michael Cera.
I'm just going to go super bad then.
Ben's got it. He's got it. 2 points to Ben.
I knew that. I should have gone after the third one.
It's all right. 2 points is better than none. I don't like this already. Shit the bed.
Okay, so we're ready for number two. So, for 5 points, Tobey Maguire.
No.
Any takers?
No way. I'm not risking it. The next one I might go for.
Okay, for 4 points, Kirsten Dunst. It is so tense in here right now. Any takers?
He's looking like he might have a pun.
It's a risky one, isn't it?
Mm.
Are you going to do it?
It's basically one in three.
I know. I'm going to go for it.
Go on in.
Spider-Man 2.
Locked out.
All right, give us the next one.
Okay, the next one. J.K. Simmons.
Next one.
James Franco.
Next one. I'm going to get the easy 1 point.
Okay. Willem Dafoe.
Oh, he's in the first one. Spider-Man 1.
Got it in one. Yeah. There you go. So, after two rounds, Ben is leading with 3 points. Mark is yet to score.
That's a lot, though.
I'm surprised you didn't get for more points. I was like, what's he doing? It's obviously one or three.
It's because I'm the last one. If you listen back to the last episode, I was punting too early and I got mugged. So, I'm playing the long game today.
That's what you say, but I did win. Third one. George Clooney.
Oh, Mark lent in.
No, I'm just shaking my head. I'm thinking the scoring. You're on three, aren't you?
Yeah, you can overcome that quite easily.
Okay,
so for 4 points, Brad Pitt.
I'm going to guess.
Go on.
Right, you shafted me twice here with another game show here.
Okay.
Ocean's 12.
Holy shit! 4 points to Mark!
Because I knew you'd
good
done
pun.
It with...
Good point.
I've done you don't with Spider-Man.
Oh my God.
Put that down because he can see.
I didn't.
So I had Matt Damon for three, Catherine Zeta-Jones for two, which was a giveaway, and Don Cheadle for one. Well done. So, Mark leads.
Back in the lead.
Mark leads.
This game's... Can we just do this game forever? It is the one that I'd like to keep going for a while.
It means I don't win or lose, so I'm in a neutral position here.
This is scary shit.
So, 4-3. The next one. Christina Ricci. I can't go that low. That's for 5 points, by the way. So,
She's not actually been in that much.
No. Well,
so instantly I'm like, I know the film, but I'm not going to say it because there's someone else.
Okay. For 4 points. Johnny Depp.
Can I guess?
You didn't even say the bloody name.
She did. Johnny.
Johnny Depp.
Yeah.
4 points.
No. No, I was thinking. There's one actor that I was waiting for you to say. Right. I was thinking you were going to say Samuel L. Jackson, but it's not. No. So now there's two. Come on.
Ben, do you want to give it a go?
No.
Come on, Ben.
Okay, right. For 3 points. Christopher Lee.
Yes, I'd like to guess.
Okay, go on. For 3 points.
Sleepy Hollow.
No, I've never seen that film. I didn't know that they were in it.
Shit. Oh.
2 points, Christopher Walken. 1 point was Miranda Richardson. So, oh my God, we've not seen a turnaround here like this before. Mark is on seven. Ben is on three.
So hold on. So is this the last one?
You need to get four to draw.
This is the last one, yes. Four to draw.
Or five for the win.
Five for the win.
Shit. Shall I just go for it?
So, the last round for 5 points.
Hang on, I just need to breathe. I'm being serious. I actually feel like I'm going to have a heart attack. Give me one sec. I'm not even editing this out. I need to breathe. This is so close. Right, okay, do this. Right. Oh, this is good. 5 points caught up to it. This could be a Dark Knight moment.
I'm not even...
Listeners, take your earphones slightly out right now.
I'm not even playing and I'm so sweaty right now. Right, so the last round of Cast and Furious 2017 for 5 points. I'm trying to be serious here.
Okay, go.
For 5 points.
Remember the Ben Starr voice.
John Goodman. Any takers?
I would be absolutely stupid to risk it.
Yeah.
And I'm not going
to. Okay.
Okay, okay, right. So, for 4 points, Steve Buscemi.
The Big Lebowski.
Ben, you're locked out.
Balls.
You're locked out. Oh, my God.
So, Mark's won by default.
Mark wins! Mark
well,
wins!
I want to keep wins! Going. Keep going. This needs to be the score.
There's so... two.
It's not Big Lebowski. Jesus.
Mm-mm. For 3 points, James Coburn.
Oh, you still could be two, you bitch.
go for 2 points. One of two.
Okay. Billy Crystal.
I'm going to have a guess.
Right.
Monsters, Inc., the first one.
Mark wins! Yeah! Mark wins!
Mark had already won. He already won.
Just even more.
And the last one was Jennifer Tilly. My God. Mark it in your diary, folks. This is a historical day. Mark wins. By God, Mark wins.
Amazing.
Do we want to do a tiebreaker just in case for funsies?
Yes.
Yeah? All right.
This
then.
Is the real quiz.
So for the tiebreaker.
I just want to thank my mum, the listeners, my dad.
God.
At the moment, I am the best games player on Skip Down in 2017.
Well done.
Oh my God. So for funs, we had, for 5 points, Ryan Gosling.
Nope.
For 4 points?
A Gangster Squad.
Not this time. Nah. I'm sorry. For 4 points?
Yes.
Emma Stone.
Crazy Stupid Love.
Yep.
He's guessed twice.
The game's already ended. Does it matter?
I'll give it
to Ben for that one. So this is... I don't have any words left in my vocab except Mark wins Cast and Furious.
Woo! Mark is the champ. Woo! Soak that in.
Drink it.
Drink it in, man.
Let's just dedicate the rest of the episode to me. And... I don't mind, you know, moving on and talking about the next game show.
Yes.
Let's do it.
We've got another one for you. I'm not going to tell you the details, just going to give you the name, juice you up, leave you dangling as per. On the next episode of the next three episodes, we're going to be playing List and Shout.
Quiet now, please. The champion is about to speak.
Oh, dear.
Oh, we're going to have to subside with this now.
So the listener questions, and you guys can come in this, not just for the champion, they're for all three of us. Question one from HWD Classics. Now, this is it's not going to be a long book version of an answer, but he wants to know, how did actually Skip to the End start out? Ben, little story time.
So me, you and Adam were in a pub once. I think we'd been to the cinema to maybe see Captain America. And we were in the pub and we were just having a beer and chatting about what we thought of the film. And one of us, I think it was you, Mark, said, we should record this. And then we just started spitballing the concept, as you and I often do. We will start with a kernel of an idea and before you know it, we're on a flight to WrestleMania.
Is that true?
So we took that little kernel of an idea and we were like, okay, let's do a one-off. Let's try and do a podcast. And if it's absolute garbage, we'll get rid of it. If it turns out all right, that was the pilot, and then we'll start doing it properly. We were so happy with the pilot that we put together that we were like, let's throw this out into the world and see what happens. 2.5 years later, we've had getting on for 4 million downloads.
And that's it, exactly that. And people always used to say, it's really good, your podcast, because it sounds like if you're just sitting on a table next door with a group of guys at a pub talking about a film. And that is exactly how it came about. Sorry you can't be in that story, but hey, it's a good happy ending for you.
That's nice to hear.
AlRob_MN. Do you guys like IPA beer, or is it constantly going to be cider?
I am a fan of an IPA. I'm an ale man.
I'm not, but you've got me into a few when we've been out before, and you've gone, try this, and I've always had a sip of it, especially when we're at like gigs and stuff. Bloody love some of it, but it's always weird names I can never remember.
Yeah. I prefer a stout. If Guinness are listening, send us a few cans.
Yep. Gemma?
IPAs are actually quite nice. I mean, it's not my first choice of drink, but there's no harm in them, and yeah, I dig it.
We are going to go away from cider because it's making me get gassy during the recording. Jora the Explorer. On the spot, which is the better trilogy? Dark Knight or Captain America?
Dark Knight.
Yeah, I'd say Dark Knight as well. Dark Knight.
But mm-hmm. Captain America's bloody good.
It is bloody good. But the second film in the Dark Knight trilogy is just so much better than anything in the MCU that I have to give it to that.
Show Nuff John, at what point has a film series gone way too far?
Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yes, exactly that.
Why? And we're getting a new film in the next few months or something. Why? Just why? All that money could have gone to, I don't know, something else. Just
anything
not
else.
Pirates of the fucking Caribbean.
Yeah.
I've gone with Saw, because I love the first one. Even Ben was praising it, and you're not a massive horror fan.
No.
But Scream. Scream 4 came out. Scream 3, and I really liked the originals. And even the second was okay.
Second was okay. It was fun.
Yeah.
It was a fun film, but yeah, it should never have happened.
Police Academy. Six was a masterpiece, but seven was one too far.
Super Movie Pod have said, with M. Night Shyamalan now bringing out a good rated high film, is it about time that we actually move him away from the list of stinkers? He's had a lot of bad press. He's in the Hollywood doghouse. Do you believe it's now time to let him out? Has he done enough?
No, One Gun Gabe don't put you in the Hall of Fame. He needs back-to-back successes, I think, before he can come out of the doghouse entirely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what he said. Yeah, I mean, that. It's a shame because the bad does outweigh the good, unfortunately. It might be a case of maybe not let him have that free reign that he's had previously. You know, actually get people on board, rein him in, like throw a few ideas out, but actually work with someone, because sometimes the ideas that he has doesn't necessarily work.
Unbreakable 2, that's all we need.
Hello.
Then you're out of the doghouse.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you're out of it for a long time. Rory Patterson, what, you've actually discussed this today, what movie made you fall in love with cinema?
Oh, well, if you go back to a few moments in the episode, there's my answer. So you guys go for it.
I think mine's the obvious answer. It would be Star Wars. It kind of broadens your horizons as to what film can be, especially when you're a kid. When you're seeing that for the first time as a kid, you think, shit, this whole realm of entertainment is now open to me.
Mine is Enter the Dragon, Bruce Lee,
because
my dad used to make me watch it, and I just was infatuated with the way it was filmed and the way. I wasn't there sitting there going, oh, the cinematography, Dad's really good. I didn't care. It was just two guys beating the shit out of each other. But it made me want to watch The Big Boss and Way of the Dragon and everything else.
Way of the Dragon. Thank you.
Correct. But yes, it was definitely Enter the Dragon, which is a random choice, but it made me want to watch a lot more martial arts and violent films. Simon Appleton, you're allowed to visit the set of a 2017 released movie. You're allowed to interview all the cast and watch the filming as it's taking place. What are you going to choose?
Oh, I know mine.
I'm going to pick Predictors.
It's Blade Runner. Of course it's Blade Runner.
Even though it might not be great, is there not your Star Wars, you know, Episode 8, stuff like that?
No, it'd be Blade Runner for me.
Yeah.
Denis Villeneuve, I think, is the best thing going in cinema at the minute in terms of directors. You've got Harrison Ford back on the case. Ridley Scott's producing it. Hampton Fancher, who wrote the original, has wrote the sequel. And you've got Ryan Gosling in the mix as well. What could go wrong?
Yeah, okay.
Famous last words.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind going there because I'd like to get to know Ryan Gosling a little bit more.
Get in queue.
Yeah. So the film that I'm really looking forward to is a horror film that's due, I think, in a few months, called Get Out. So it's by Jordan Peele. It's his directorial debut, and he's of Key and Peele fame as well. Great comedians. And it's going to be a bit of a different kind of horror film as well. I think there's a lot of sort of undertones in terms of racism as well. They've mixed that in with this whole kind of almost like Invasion of the Body Snatchers kind of vibe to it as well. So I would have loved to have seen what was going on with that. And just, I'm very excited about this. And, you know, Key and Peele.
We saw the trailer for that today, didn't we? In front of
it did look
Split,
good, to be fair.
It just looks different to what's out there as well. So I'm very excited about this.
I would pick Guardians 2. I'd like to hang out with James Gunn.
Mm-hmm.
I think he'd be great fun. And I just want to see what's going on. Batista, you know, all those guys. It'd be awesome. Declan Hayes, what movie has universal love but doesn't float your boat? Harry Potter for me. I'm sorry, I don't like it. I don't think the guy can act. It's overhyped. It's never deserves the love and praise. It's a good set of films, and it deserves, as in the Takens and kids got into reading and all this, it's great. But I just can't stand Daniel Radcliffe as that portrayal of Harry Potter. He's a little prick.
Did you see Swiss Army Man last year?
Oh, I really want to see this. I didn't know.
No.
It's really good. And Radcliffe is fantastic in it. I'm hoping that if you were to watch that, it should kind of turn the corner.
Is that when he's got like Best Mates of a Dead Body or something?
He is the dead body.
He's, oh, yeah. Right. Yeah. Okay, so... Okay, I'll watch that. And
give it a go.
Yeah. It right.
It's not going to change the fact that he was shit in the early Harry Potter, because he was. He couldn't act to save his life, but he has grown into being a good actor, massively.
Okay.
Forrest Gump for me is a piece of shit. Saccharine garbage.
Don't hold back. Come on, please.
For me, I absolutely detest and I cannot stand Dirty Dancing. I just can't. I can't. It's just... No.
That bad?
I cannot stand it.
No one puts Gemma in the corner?
No, because I'll smash their face in.
Violence! More goodier than. You're allowed to see a film again for the very first time. What would you choose?
Star Wars.
So your mind's blank.
Star Wars, yeah. I think so, because for me, the first time I ever saw it, it's the ultimate good versus evil film. And I don't think there's a patch on other films that have done that successfully as Star Wars. So, yeah, for me, Star Wars.
I think there's a fair few for me, but one that I only saw recently for the first time anyway was Jaws. And just because that was such a watershed moment for me, seeing Jaws for the first time 18 months ago, I want to relive that again.
Whiplash.
Oh my God, yes.
Just that experience, I remember walking home with Ben, like, what have we just seen? Like, wow. Or Her.
Yeah.
Her was bloody good. And I like the feeling I had from that was great. Epic Film Guys, who are a great podcast and plug us a lot, so thanks very much. When people talk about their favourite film and how many times they've seen it, how many times have you actually seen your favourite film realistically?
God, I don't think a lot, to be honest.
Because it's not like thousands.
No.
People that say I've seen it a thousand, you haven't.
I think films that I enjoy watching, I know that it'll have my full attention, I probably watch more than my favourite films. So when it comes to, like, for example, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest or Spirited Away, I believe for that, that's a film that you watch like maybe once a year, because it is just perfect. Mm. In my opinion, they are perfect films. So I'd rather just watch them more sporadically than something that I could watch maybe every month or every 2 months. So,
I think the original Star Wars trilogy, I will watch probably at least twice a year and have done every year for probably 25 years. So if you say, I'd say 50. I think that's a fair estimate. And then a more recent one, I have seen Anchorman at least 20 times.
Yeah.
We're not getting into that territory.
You made a whole wheel of cheese.
Oh, go on, have a couple. Go on, Ben.
Oh, Baxter, you are my little gentleman.
I'll take you to foggy London town because you are what? My little gentleman.
That's it. It'd be Jaws, but I've only seen it about 100 times, and that's the truth. Mm. But that's, you know, 2 or 3 times a year. Sometimes when my mates come around, we'll watch it. It's realistic. Yeah. Anyone that says thousands, you haven't.
I do remember as a kid, I used to watch Charlie and the Chocolate Factory nearly every single day. I think that's probably my most watched film, if I'm honest.
Cost with a K has asked us, have you guys considered putting times on your episodes for when you use bad language for the sensitive people in the world?
Fuck no.
Fuck that.
Bollocks to that.
But we do put the times on there for everyone else, but no, it takes too much time.
On iTunes, we have the little E to say that it's explicit. Yeah. If you don't like explicit content, go fuck yourself.
Exactly. At Nina, which is Ninny Pops, do you guys support any independent cinemas?
Prince Charles Cinema in London, and my hometown in Northampton is the Errol Flynn Film House. Mm-hmm. Wonderful places to go and watch films, old and new.
There's the Electric in Birmingham and the Phoenix in Leicester.
Mm-hmm. Both ones that we've seen The Room.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Yeah, we do, massively. And Prince Charles, when we can get down there, we've always got some really good stuff going on.
They really do.
It's quite reassuring that you can still see some actually going against the big...
And you know what? I love the fact that we had answers for that, so I feel good.
At Flicks Watcher Pod... Great question. Any films that you use as a yardstick when meeting new people? They use Donnie Darko and The Big Lebowski. If they don't like it, they know they're not going to get on with someone.
That's a really good yardstick.
It's a really
good
one.
I'll take that.
I'm going to say Napoleon Dynamite. That's the truth. If someone doesn't like Napoleon Dynamite, they're not going to be around for long.
I guess mine is a comparison one. If I say to someone, do you prefer Star Wars or Lord of the Rings? If they say the Lord of the Rings trilogy, we ain't going to be friends.
Yeah. It's as simple as that, literally. Yeah. Bye.
Toy Story, I think, because it just goes to show that if somebody does have a sense of fun and sense of personality, and if they don't, well, then you're dead to me. So, bye.
New listener said she's absolutely loving our podcast, Kelly Marie Robinson. Now, this is different to your favourite film. If you could watch one film for the rest of your life, what would it be?
Ooh. Gosh.
It's difficult, isn't it? Because it wouldn't be Star Wars, because you probably wouldn't want to watch it again and again and again.
Oh, I don't know.
Groundhog Day. Mine would be Jaws. It's obvious. I just love it and I never got bored of it. If I've watched it that many times and it still feels great and I don't think it looks dated, and I don't see that as a shit looking shark. I love it. I love everything about it. It would be Jaws.
I think for me it would be Spirited Away.
Oh, great choice.
Because it's just such a happy, beautiful, wonderful film, and so I'd be happy to live the rest of my days with that.
Die Hard. Because it's got everything. Nice. It's got everything in it.
That's a great choice. And it would feel like Christmas every day.
Yeah.
A few more to go. We got Daniel Christine has said, if you could own any movie, car or van, what would you choose?
Hoverboard.
Oh, the DeLorean. That would look cool driving around in that.
It would do.
The A-team van would be cool.
Yeah, yeah, rock up at Tesco's for your weekly shop.
I'd have the Mutz Cuts van from Dumb and Dumber.
From Tesco. Just getting some milk. Watch the ears. Yeah. I always think that car would suck if it rained. Would it smell like wet dog and like horrible
so
carpet?
Damp.
Damien Bullock has asked, what's the cheesiest film in the world but you actually love?
Love Actually. It's like you shouldn't love it, but it's harmless. It's all right with me.
I don't know. I'm very much lactose intolerant when it comes to cheesy films. I don't know that there are any that I like.
My wife watches a lot of chick flicks and sort of love films and stuff like this. And, you know, like The Holiday and all these Christmassy films and Bridget Jones and stuff. And I don't like them all, but she watched Devil Wears Prada. That is a bit cheesy and everything. It shouldn't be in my DVD collection, but I don't mind it when that's on. I'm like, do you know what? This is quite good.
You know
I enjoy
what?
It.
You say Devil Wears Prada. I always think of The Office when Michael watches it for the first time. Steak! Where's my steak? And then he realises he watched it to the end. I am so sorry.
I suppose, would you consider Legally Blonde to be a cheesy film?
Yeah, that's that film. Like proper Parmesan.
And the very final question is, Carl Bertels has asked, he's recently watched Requiem for a Dream, and he said he's been still thinking about it 2 or 3 weeks later.
Yeah.
Can you think of a film that's had that same effect where you've been thinking about it and giving you that experience of thinking for weeks after viewing it?
That happens to me a lot
with
films. Hell or High Water recently, that played on my mind a lot. Nightcrawler especially, that did.
La La Land, the last film that we reviewed, just because I was trying to make sense of why, kind of what, Ben, what you said actually resonated with me. The fact that it wasn't a case of they didn't make it happen. It was just their lives took a different path. And so that kind of stuck with me a lot. Mm. So certainly that film.
Donnie Darko, Ben's whole talk on the last episode, I've listened to 5 or 6 times and I love it. I do. It's literally scary, all these parallel universes and this and that. And reading on the website, and it's still making me think now, like, I need to watch it again and see what's going on, and perhaps Ben's right about this bit. And then I've seen some tweets about people saying that this was a different thing, and no one's right. Mm-hmm. So I'm still thinking about, well, what the fuck was it all about? what is Frank? Honestly, loads of questions. We've got through them all. Please keep them coming. It makes the show. So thank you very much to everyone that sends their questions in. If you want your questions answering, the best way to get in contact with us is on Twitter at STTEPodcast, on Facebook /SkipsTheEndPodcast, or drop us an email, podcast@skipstheend.co.uk, and we'll answer them all again in 2 weeks' time.
That brings us to the end of another episode of the Skip to the End podcast. Another short and snappy one.
Hang on, another? Like we do short and snappy anymore?
The last one was not the bloated carcass of the one before.
It was 2 hours.
that's short for us these days.
Yeah.
But nevertheless, it's a very pleasant episode.
Indeed it was. I'm really looking forward to the next one though, mainly because we're going to be reviewing Lego Batman.
Oh my God! God!
I am super excited for that.
Is that the first for us, a main review being an animation?
No, we did Secret Life of Pets.
Ah, okay. Yeah,
but it is only the second one we've done in 2.5 years.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, and it's going to be great. The first Lego film was superb.
Incredible. And funnily enough, Will Arnett was the man that stole the Lego Movie Show. Mm-hmm. He was great.
He was the best thing in it, yeah. Absolutely.
Ben is really excited. This is the time you're going to hear like a child being allowed to go to the cinema.
Seriously, like I'm whizzing my tits off just thinking about we're going to be reviewing that. So I'm like, yes!
You'll be buying the popcorn with the special packaging, the cup holder with the Lego man on.
Big time.
I'll see you at the counter.
Yeah, man, I'll meet you there. Mark, what is our topic of conversation?
It's going to be our top 3 revenge films.
Yes.
Trust me, there's a lot. Hell of a lot.
That'll be very interesting. Gemma, who are we mass debating over?
We're going to be masturbating over Ben Affleck.
That's going to be a big one.
Oh, Batfleck himself.
Massive one.
Just like him.
Oh, brutal. It's muscle.
No, that's what I meant.
Yes, it's.
I didn't say Ben Fatleck.
Nice.
And our rewatch is going to be a slightly different one. We've never done 2 films before. We're going to do Inception and Paprika to compare and contrast and see if Nolan really did rip off Paprika wholesale.
That's going to be awesome. Wait, I'm super excited.
I'm just going to stop right now. And I'm going to announce something.
Oh.
Go for it.
Gemma.
Hello.
Happy birthday, darling. You've been here exactly 6 months.
Oh, my God.
Episode 13, we do 26 a year. Yeah. 63, you start on 50. Do the maths. You've been here 6 months.
Oh.
Let's have a little toast.
Cheers. Well,
chin, chin.
Cheers,
which
guys.
Means there's a review next week. Your 6 month review. We're not going to do that. But no, honestly.
Wow.
The feedback for you has been unbelievable.
Yeah.
Listeners have gone up. We give you a lot of jeer. I was driving back from a gig yesterday and our friend Benny said to us, you rip that girl and you on every week, but it's all good.
It is.
I'm going to say it on this podcast now. We absolutely love you.
Yeah.
Massive, massive thank you for joining us. We absolutely adore your work. We listen back and we have the best time ever.
Yeah.
And the listeners are jumping on board. And thank you, honestly. We have to do this because we rip you every week. And I wanted to make a point of saying, it's been a bloody good 6 months.
Thank you, guys.
So here's to 6 months more.
Indeed. Yeah. But if she keeps saying Seth Rogen, then we're going to have to keep ripping her.
I feel awful. I literally practiced all week to say gun, like Rogen. And then I blew it all at the tense. That's how tense the game shows are, though.
So here's to 6 more months of Gemmerisms.
Let's do it.
And then after that, we'll decide whether we're keeping it.
Year review.
Oh, the next episode sounds amazing already. Like Lego Batman.
Oh.
Ben Affleck. See what we did there?
Yeah, synergy.
That's pretty good.
Wow, yeah.
Revenge, because Batman gets revenge.
Brilliant. Yes. You're reaching now.
Tie Inception and Paprika together.
Right, enough of this. See you in 2 weeks.